You're going to lead off and give a little recap of yesterday and the highlight of the events today?
The highlights of yesterday, yeah. We have film, too. Just kidding.
Film at 11, highlights here.
Okay, good morning, Gail Wilcox, Assistant County Administrative Officer. Yesterday's actions, including the actions that were approved as part of the supplemental budget document, are as follows. The board increased expenditures for Fund Center 290 Community Development by $30,000 to increase spending for homeless services, and that money is coming from general fund contingencies. You increased expenditures for Fund Center 141, the Ag Commissioner, by $28,042 and amended the position allocation list to add one full-time equivalent ag weights and measures technician. That money is also coming from general fund contingencies. You approved a classification change for one position in behavioral health. You increased expenditures for Fund Center 160, that's the public health department, by approximately $60,000 and amended the position allocation list to add one full-time equivalent health education specialist for the obesity prevention program. Increased expenses and revenues in Fund Center 290 Community Development by about $67,000 to reflect the final allocation of HUD funding. You increased expenses and revenues for Fund Center 245, that's the roads budget, by $460,000 to reflect additional state funding for street enhancements in San Miguel. You decreased expenses in general fund support for in waste management in Fund Center 130 by about $12,000 to correct an error in calculating overhead. You increased expenses and revenues for Fund Center 136, that's the Sheriff's Department, to reflect the receipt of $350,000 in grant funds to address criminal activities related to the production and use of meth. Please note that we already added three additional positions in the budget, so we don't need to amend the position allocation list to add additional staff, as three additional deputies were already included in the budget for that. And you increased expenses in Fund Center 137, Animal Services, by $50,000 to fund an existing contract for animal licensing services. The department included revenue in the budget when they submitted it, but they forgot to include the expense for this, and that also is a general fund. My friend here to the left totaled it. She distributed something. I think the total hit on the general fund is just shy of $100,000, about $96,000, and Andrea has distributed a memo with all of the account changes and the total increase in expenses and revenues. And then finally, the board directed that the sheriff, the DA, and the chief probation officer prepare a presentation for the board's October 9th meeting on what you call emerging issues or challenges in law enforcement. What we are requested at this time is whether you want the sheriff and DA and chief probation officers to identify how these issues and the potential additional resources they need rank in terms of other priorities within their department, or if you just want a list of here's the additional resources that we need. So that would be helpful if we could get that clarification. And then as you head into the next set of budgets, we have we wanted to start with an update on golf, because I know there have been a couple conversations over the last 3 or 4 months about golf, and while there are no ad issue items, we did want to update you on the status of that situation. Concludes my comments.
Andrea, I see your head nodding, so all those numbers are correct, and you said?
Yes, all those things are correct. I would tell you that the general fund contingency balance is, as of today, $17,598,500.
Or 4.95%, just under 5%. Supervisor Patterson, do you have a question or comment?
In response to Ms. Wilcox, request for direction regarding our instructions to the sheriff. I would like to see their assessment in the context of other priorities rather than just a standalone report. That would be my preference.
I agree with that. I met with the DA this morning and talked a little bit about emerging gang activity and how that affects a number of different resources within his department and other aspects of law enforcement, and I'd very much like to see how he manages or how he would propose to rank the redistribution of resources if in fact that's what appears needing to be done.
Supervisor Assange.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just don't want us to complicate the issue to a point where we're going to ignore it. That's a scary thought. Just because there's a cost attached and that's complicated and many more departments have to be part of it, I hope we don't turn our back on
existing crime and violence that takes place in our communities.
Supervisor Olick?
No, since I fall in line with this, I've already given my comments to him.
Okay. Ms. Wilcox, is that enough direction for today? Or?
So is that a yes? That's what you want to clarify the motion to? Present it in the context of the other priorities of the department?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
I don't think we need a voice vote or anything on that, do we?
Then we will move ahead. The first set of budgets that the board's going to consider this morning are the community service budgets, and those include airports and farm advisor, fish and game, golf courses, library, parks, wildlife, and grazing. And if you so desire, we can go ahead and do the update now on golf. Or you want to take public comment? I'm sorry. You want to do public comment first?
I think it's helpful just to have public comment because a lot of the questions that come up from the public, I think, are part of the process that we can answer while you're part of your presentation, things of that nature. So having said that,
Mr. Chair, often it's preferred, and if I'm the only one thinking this way, I'm fine with it, to hear what the staff has to offer, and then that might generate some questions for the audience and include that in their time requests to speak. But if you...
Preference on the board, I don't receive two requests to speak, but if that's... Okay, we'll go with the two requests we have. First is, I'm not sure if you're going to do this together, but Cheryl Dodds and Cheryl Harrison. You'll each have 3 minutes, or I'm not sure. Are you doing a joint presentation? Please state your name for the record.
Okay. My name is Sherry Dodds. I'm from Napomo, 947 Calamex.
And I'm Cheryl Harrison from 857 Inga Road in Napomo.
And we're here to ask the board to make a separate budget for trails so that the county can accept dedication of trails. Right now, there are trails that have been put in. We've gone and asked developers to put in trails. Unfortunately, because there's not enough money, parks cannot accept the dedication of the trails. So then we, as the community, are not allowed to use them. Homeowners associations are putting up signs that say, stay off the trails. So we know that kids, older people, young people, equestrians, bike riders are all trying to use these trails as our community continues to grow. But as we're being turned away, we don't have those opportunities. So we're hoping that you will put together some funds so that the parks can maintain these trails. Thank you.
Thank you for your comment. Next request to speak is Eric Greening.
Thank you. A little slow. Part of me doesn't want to go along with the rest of me. Anyway, I am Eric Greening, and
we'll give you 30 seconds if you want to tell us why your leg's moving sore, have walking with a limp today, Eric.
No, but I can empathize with you.
I'm sure, well, Eric.
Yeah. anyway, this is apparently another day when departments agree tacitly not to ask for everything they need. You try to be as generous as you can, and everybody more or less agrees to get along and not make a big issue of it. And obviously, I feel very strongly that, again, today a lot of the departments are not asking for what they truly need. On the library, I would simply observe, if you look at the pay scales, that our library technicians are an absolutely incredible bargain in this county. And any time we can expand their services by expanding the system, expanding the hour, et cetera, it's just amazing how much useful work they perform for the little that they get. My question relative to libraries is, tonight on the agenda of the Atascadero Planning Commission, there's a time extension for the Colony Square project. They've apparently hit a rough patch in their financing or whatever. But once they're able to move forward, it may be possible and suitable for that development to incorporate a library facility for Atascadero that actually meets our needs. What we have now is maybe a third the size that we need, and by the time something else is ready, it would probably be an even lesser proportion of what we need. So my question then is, how do we prepare for that eventuality or that opportunity, and what should the citizens of Atascadero prepare to do to meet the county and be ready to move on it if and when it suddenly is something we can move on? And I share the one word Harry is probably going to come up with, which is Templeton. Relative to parks, I would just say that we've already established the tremendous need, and there are two factors that increase the need and should increase our support of the system. One is the recognition of the connection with obesity and all of the diseases that come not just from the size and shape people may be, because there's a lot of genetic variance regardless, but also lack of activity, inactivity, and the connection with the Health Commission and everybody working together certainly raises the value we place on that. The other issue is smart growth. Having adopted the smart growth principles, we can expect an increasing proportion of our residents, including the unincorporated areas, to be living without personal private yards. These dense agglomerations that are the product of smart growth tend to increase the need for collective parkland. Please take that into account. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Kim Daniels, followed by Susan Tuttle.
Good morning, Chairman Lenthal and Honorable Board. My name is Kim Daniels. I'm the General Manager of the County Employees Association. And I'm here this morning to ask that when the Gulf budget is presented, you look closely, as there is a slated elimination of a golf course supervisor. I understand that the golf courses have been in trouble for some time. There was a request made a few months ago to increase funding for Chalk Mountain by about $400,000, as I recall. The position that is slated to be eliminated is the golf course supervisor at Dairy Creek. We don't improve the level of service that we give to the community by eliminating people. Those responsibilities for that position still exist and will have to be shifted to other employees. The golf course supervisor is the line staff person that oversees what happens at that golf course. We won't continue to attract and maintain the level of service and improve service by eliminating that position and shifting those responsibilities. So when that portion of the budget comes up, I ask that you review that thoroughly before the determination is made to approve that elimination. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Last request to speak is Susan Tuttle.
Hi, thank you for letting me come up. I just am also part of the group that would hope that you guys would consider a separate budget for trails when you start reviewing that.
You need to state your name for the record, ma'am.
I'm sorry, Susan Tuttle, resident of San Luis Obispo County. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Looks like I was in error. We have one more request to speak approaching. If you'd hand that to the clerk, please, and state your name for the record.
I apologize for being late. Let me catch my breath.
We'll give you a second. We'll start the timer over here for you.
My name is Paula O'Farrell, and I live in Paso Robles. I urge the board to adopt the recommendations as suggested by the grand jury report and the Blue Ribbon Task Force to restore the Department of Parks and Beaches. During the past 22 years, I've worked as a consultant to the County of San Mateo as a database developer. About 20 years ago, this county consolidated several departments, including their parks department, into a larger umbrella department in a very similar way that San Luis Obispo did. About 2 years ago, San Mateo County broke up these consolidated departments and restored many of their divisions to their former department-level status on the recommendations of an outside management consulting firm. In the past week, I've taken the opportunity to talk to people in these departments that had gone through this reorg twice if you will. These were top-level managers, 20-plus years veterans that I've known personally, who have, again, gone through this. Every single person was highly supportive of this reorg. Specifically in the new parks department, they decided many benefits. The word focus kept coming up in every conversation. Better alignment, focus of all services to their core business function and mission, no longer subsidizing other functions that are not part of their business function, vastly easier to market their services, and very important, direct access to decision makers. During the budget hearings, they found that their financial needs were no longer being rolled up into a larger agency budget, oftentimes masking the nature of budget cuts in relation to services. Certainly equal footing with peer organizations and other counties kept coming up in the conversations. So I think as a case study example, as I spoke with these people, it's very clear that there were many benefits to restoring some of these divisions to proper department level status. So I urge you to accept the recommendations from the grand jury report and the Blue Ribbon Task Force. Thank you.
Thank you. Supervisor Robert, did you have a question?
No, no, not a question. I was wanted to comment. I just read last night we got done a report from Parks, and Pete, maybe when you come up, it had to do with trails, and it seems to be we've got a plan of action for some of those being accepted into the system. I just went through it real quick, so if you could probably bring that up and satisfy the question that's going on here. And the other thing, if I'm not mistaken, and it was an email or something within the last week, isn't there Mr. Edge, a meeting coming up on this issue about the parks thing, or there's an ongoing thing? I know there was something that was set to happen with that.
Not up yet.
I'm dead. It's Supervisor Patterson and Supervisor Gibson are handling that.
Okay. I'd be happy to make some comments at a point here.
Yeah, I just want to say that it's being looked at. It's right. Not ignored, yeah.
Okay, that was our last request to speak. We'll close public comment, bring it back to the board. Ms. Wilcox, would you like to lead off now?
Sure. A couple of comments on the parks issue. I was going to same thing. We could have an update maybe from the supervisors who are on the committee. Also, I think you're aware that Dwayne Leib, the General Services Director, has been researching and discussing with the staff proposed reorganization. And I spoke with him last week and asked him to present his proposal, at least, for the reorg and the time frame to me by the end of the month, end of this month, which he said he would do. And then you can fold that into the discussions that you're having with the committee and the Parks and Recs folks, et cetera. On golf, so a little bit of history, and then maybe Pete can join. Are you Pete? There you go. Can come up and we can give an update on the golf. There's nothing again specifically, no action being requested or recommended at this time. I think it was in March of this year that Pete came to the board requesting $350,000 of general fund money to do some infrastructure improvements at Chalk Mountain. That amount was approved by the board. Pete also identified another, was it $1 to $2 million, something like that, close to $2 million worth of infrastructure improvements that were needed at all three golf courses. And at that point, the board directed that we work with the Parks Division of General Services to conduct a review of their expenses and revenues. Subsequently, major water line at Morro Bay Golf Course broke. The department was then requesting, was that May, $500,000 from general fund, although that was an estimate because they hadn't got an actual bid yet. The board approved $100,000 and directed that the department, again, go look at other alternatives. And I think sent the message at that time was that the board was that you want golfers to pay for golf as opposed to general county taxpayers. And Pete has some ideas and some, he can update you on the progress. I know that one of the things the board had talked about was a fee increase in particular. And when we spoke, Pete seems to, a fee increase is in order, but doesn't think that the market will bear much more than what he will need to cover the increased pension and salary cost for county employees. So he can update you a little bit about that. Bottom line is, at this point, his position is he was requesting a loan, although not today, but down the line, a loan from the general fund that he anticipates, based on the information he's going to share with you here in a minute, that can be repaid. And then I know David wants to comment on that. In terms of the position, then that'll be the end of my comments. The golf budget has a golf superintendent and two golf supervisors. One of the supervisors is being recommended for deletion by the department, given the financial situation. They have 8 greenskeepers and 4 lead greenskeepers and 2 equipment mechanics. and the staff are allocated to two of the golf courses. It's important to note that one, Chalk Mountain, is operated by a concessionaire, so we don't staff that. We don't have greenskeepers, et cetera, there. So take it away, Pete.
Pete Janney, Parks Manager. And we'll start with Morro Bay, just a brief update as to where we are. We did look at fees, and I think it is going to be appropriate for fee increases to be passed along to the golfers. We've kind of prepared them for that. I think everybody kind of got the message loud and clear that the program will continue to operate as an enterprise fund. Two issues complicate doing that immediately. One is just your busy calendar. Getting to you in time to make those fees applicable anytime sooner than September is going to be very challenging. And wherever there's room in the market, and that's primarily our rack rate that the tourists are paying, that are gladly going to come and pay our low rates, wasn't going to yield a whole lot of money if we didn't implement something until September. Because we are on a calendar year cycle as opposed to fiscal year, we've already begun our fee process for 08. We're going to be before your board in the fall anyway, so for the sake of jumping that whole process for 3 months, our recommendation is that we stick to the normal process. We'll incorporate increases at Morro Bay specifically to help with these infrastructure needs. We lose a couple of months of our slow season of not implementing those fees if we wait until that point. And I think it's important that we honor the process we've had with our customers, because we have a very collaborative process of developing fees with an ad hoc group of our advisory committee, which has just actually about 2 weeks ago been appointed for the new year. So that's our recommendation at this time, is kind of stay the course, and we'll be there to increase fees in January likely. Funding is an issue. The big issue we think is that we're going to find room to fund this project is through a renegotiation with state parks over our operating agreement at the golf course. Obviously, this isn't the time and place to discuss the terms of those conditions, but I think there is ample room, and I think state parks understands the need that the market has changed since that agreement was executed in 1999, and I think there's fertile ground for us to make some changes that will generate savings that will pay off the loan that we're going to request from the general fund to do the capital improvements. We did investigate the city of Morro Bay, their participation. It was very clear that they do have a dog in this fight. It was also very clear, based on the response I received from their city manager, that they are not in a position financially to assist us at this point. So they kind of wished us good luck. And we're on our own in that case. I am still investigating the potential of some state funds being used. Some fruitful discussions with Nick Franco, who's the local state park superintendent. And since it looks like we'll be into the new fiscal year before this project is actually culminated, there may be an opportunity to use some Prop 84 funds to help pay for this. So that may significantly reduce the size of the loan that's necessary. That will play out as negotiations continue. And just an update on the project, we're about to let an engineering contract that will get us in line that we can start with the permitting. This is an emergency that's rolling out in slow motion, as it turns out, because as everything else we do, it has been complicated by finances, permitting, funding, and the whole routine. So I'd be happy to answer questions, but at this point, we seem to have what staff is comfortable. We have a solution to the financial needs if we can get that bridge loan to get us through with this project. And it's something we've done in the past. We've borrowed money for equipment. We have borrowed money, for large irrigation projects. Not so much businesses, pretty much business as usual as we've done in the past. And the burden should be borne by the golfers in this case, will not be borne by the general fund. It's pretty loud and clear that was direction from the board.
Thank you, Mr. Jenny. We do have some questions for you here before you step down. Supervisor Patterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Jenny, will you speak to the issue of the reduction of one supervisor and also some issues were raised this morning regarding trails? And I know that it has been a policy of the Parks Department to not accept dedicated easements in certain instances and actually build a trail when there wasn't a funding associated with the ongoing maintenance. So could you speak to that overall program and when you accept it and when you don't? Because I know people have raised the issue, well, at least accept the easement, and then when you have the funding, build the trail. So
right. I'd like an opportunity to kind of walk the board and the public through the game plan we're going to be proposing.
Thank you.
Back to the issue of the position. Obviously, it was something that was done with a lot of trepidation, eliminating a supervisory position of the golf program. I will point out to you one of those greenskeeper positions that Gail alluded to has been held vacant for over 2 years now because of lack of funding. We're back to the issue that the golfers are paying the way, and with the depressed market, the available funds are limited. And as a result of that, We had a choice, basically. We could have lost two positions at the bottom or one position at the top, because that's kind of the equivalent of that supervisor versus the greenskeeper. You'll note in your budget that there are capital needs that we requested as a budget augmentation, something we haven't received in the golf program before, that are not recommended for funding. But you're going to see $95,000 worth of funding for equipment, and Gail mentioned $2 million of capital needs. We're having to make some tough choices. I'll tell you that in the roughly 4 months since that position has been moved out of the field, and anticipating this change, we had reassigned the employee to do some preparatory work working on manuals on the park to help with the transition. We're not in great shape, but we're getting by. We're making do heroic efforts of Tommy Massey, who's our golf course supervisor at Morro Bay, who is now splitting his time, and Ray Festa, who's picking up the slack. And we've delegated up and we've delegated down to make it work. But we're trying to balance, as any business would, to a bottom line. And this, probably as much as anything else accounting does, is we operate very much like a business.
Are you eliminating the position, or are you just not filling it for another year? I know there's a difference there.
Well,
position is recommended by the department for elimination, and that's the same thing that the CAO recommended. A layoff notice has gone out to the individual.
And obviously, if the golf business turns around and we can settle our finances with state parks and we see, you know, greener pastures ahead, we may be back here in another year or two, you know, if we feel we can restore the position. It is important to it. So was the greenskeeper position that we didn't fill. In fact, for a while, we had two greenskeeper positions we weren't filling. But today, it's what we need to do to make the bottom line work. As to trails, hopefully by now, each of the board members has seen just kind of a sketchy overview of the issue of what we think is the game plan, the next step. Now that, as of December, we have a recreation element and therefore a trails plan, we've got a lot of cleaning up to do. And the next step of that is looking at all of these offers of dedication, some of which no longer fit the trails plan. Some of them were conditioned at a time when we thought we were going to zig, and now we're zagging. We've actually accepted some dedications that no longer make sense. And we're going to come back, hopefully sometime later this summer or early fall, to the board with what we see as a comprehensive program to now align those dedications with the master plan that we have, the rec element. Releasing the ones that no longer make sense and looking to accept all those dedications without necessarily, you know, in the road department, without prejudice. I mean, accept them to get them into the inventory so we don't lose track of them, but we won't necessarily be opening them or acquiring the need to maintain them and therefore the expense until we have a comprehensive trail from a point A to point B, all consistent with the rec element. But we've been holding off in the last year or so waiting completion and adoption of a trails plan, so that action was in concert with the plan that the board's adopted. There are a few pieces that don't fit that. There was a time 6, 7, 8 years ago when we were conditioning developers to not just offer a trail dedication, but to build the trail. We're not doing that today because it's setting us up for the situation of having to accept the trail because it's there and on the ground and people want to use it. But we still have a few of those random ones out there. And that you heard about one this morning, Knollwood in the Pomo area where the trail is built. The homeowners are operating it. They've offered it to us, and we haven't been in a position to accept it. We've got an estimate somewhere in the range of $10,000, just a tad more, is what it would take in annual cost to maintain that. So that was also part of our intent, is to come back. There's a couple of other issues. Harry's aware that there's one in Templeton Vineyard Estates is right on the verge of completion. We required it be built. It's now been built and landscaped, and we're going to have to make a decision whether we're going to accept it into the inventory because people are using it today. So we're going to have a few of those that we're going to have to force the issue either to say, no, that's not it, we're not going to take it, and homeowners deal with it, or that we'll take them into the inventory, recognizing there will be a small incremental cost to do that. But for the most part, it will be a process of just accepting dedications and buys us some time to figure out how we're going to pay for those trails once they're ready to be actually constructed.
Have you considered including some sort of maintenance funding agreement as part of the process, rather than just taking it on at the county's expense?
There's been some discussion about that. The problem is that a lot of the development that would have generated that, the horse is out of the barn already. It's certainly an action that the board could look at, is, you know, imposing some sort of a development fee for an ongoing process in the future. We're beginning to explore what those options are. We've had some discussion with Supervisor Sajin because this has been a big issue and in the Pomo area, but it really is an issue throughout the county. And frankly, that's probably what it's going to take, is some new mechanism. The board's probably aware that the same issue is being looked at for bike lanes by Public Works, of looking at implementing some sort of a fee system. And I think there will be ample ground for us to work collaboratively with them, because we're talking trails. It doesn't make a whole lot of difference if it's your commute to work on Monday through Friday and it's your recreational ride on the weekend. It's the same trail. But we don't have a solution to that yet.
When you come back to the board in late summer or fall with your new trail strategy, could you include some options for discussion on
how to pay for it? We intend to do that as part of the program, because frankly, that's going to be the sticky part. That's going to take time to work out whatever that solution is.
Great. Thank you, Pete.
Thank you. Supervisor Asajjan?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Deja vu all over again. Anytime we have a development within any given community, it does impact that community. And to say that development has not benefited the county, think twice about it, because now we're concerned about the future because we don't have any developments that are coming through the process. So there's a financial benefit for the county with the impact that it does to the nearby communities. We talk about money, but anytime I raise the issue of volunteers, we back off for whatever reasons. Years ago, when the community came to me and said, we need better cleanup of our streets, and we said, well, how about volunteers? We started adopting the road, just like Caltrans does. And now we don't hear that problem anymore. Anytime we have a development that counts as an easement for a equestrian trail in a community that's adopted the horse-friendly motto, when they come to give the county the easement, we say no, because we don't have the money to maintain, and the homeowners, because of liability issues, block it off, and we'll wait till such time that we have the money to go and maintain it, and by then you have weeds growing, trees have been planted, people's fences have come through, you name it, it's there, and it's going to cost us multi-dollars more to go back to where we should have been to start with. We have a community that has been crying out loud to say, we want to do it. We don't expect the county to spend the money. We are here. We're organized. You have organizations such as Right Knee Pomo. You have other equestrian folks that have put their money where their mouth is and said, and they did so. They did so in the parks. For many years, we cried out, we don't have the money. The trees are dying. They're diseased. Till we got off our high horse and said, let's bring the volunteers in. They came in and they replanted the trees and we're happy. So what is it going to take for us to say, let's trust the community who's willing to put it in writing and put their signatures on the dotted line to say, we'll maintain this equestrian trail? Or what we have to do is accept it within the county trails organization, and then the issue of the liability, we're happy with. The Homeowners Association is happy with, and we do have that insurance as it applies to all over the parks organization. Mr. Jenny and his group did an excellent job of putting an appreciation barbecue for his volunteers, and there were plenty. And many faces were recognized, being from Nipomo, who still raised the same question, when are you going to allow us to take care of the equestrian trails? And I'm looking at what I've asked Ms. Jan DeLeo to bring me an estimate, because all what I hear is we don't have the money, we don't have the people. I finally said, well, how much money are we talking about? And according to these last figures, and I appreciate that she rushed it through, but I think if we put a little more thought into it, we can do better. And this estimate or guesstimate is about $5,000 a mile. You know, I used to do highway cleanup for 2 miles a stretch once a month, and never cost me this kind of money. And if you think maintaining highway is less risky than maintaining equestrian trails, when people are driving by you doing 70 miles an hour at least, and maybe want to honk their horn just to say hi and being friendly and scare the hell out of you, think again. And we have come to a point where this is a real issue for us. The issue of going back and being creative that has been talked about, and I would like to see that happen. I think Mr. Jenny got the message, and the message will be then related to the planning department, that whenever we are talking about larger developments, as we have done so in the past when Mr. Wistrom had a development off of Sweet Donaway, and I don't know exact. We put in maybe $75,000 in endowment fund to maintain those trails. I think the same philosophy, the same creativity, the same thinking can apply in any development that takes place in equestrian-friendly communities, and that's something we need to look at. But now we have, such as Knollwood, as Mr. Jenny mentioned, that we did not accept it. It's a shame that we didn't, simply because we said it costs. When the developer is there and has done the grading, it's ready to go, and we have a bunch of volunteers who are not just giving us a lip service. They have come through time after time. We could have simply accepted it, get rid of the liability issue for those who will maintain it and the homeowners association. That's the only risk we're taking it. And there is very, very little risk involved in maintaining equestrian trails, period. Where I'm not making sense, I'd like somebody to tell me as why we're not able to do that. And many of those hours and the cost involved in the $5,000 figure per mile, this is just right. This is not a way of government scaring us out of getting the community involved in our daily affairs. So I would like, and what I've asked Mr. Jenny to do, and maybe during the short time period wasn't able to provide it, is to bring forward, as we did see in this article that you put out with the number of trails that are out there, to bring us some priority list as what it's going to cost. And we need to take that to the community and see where would they partner with us. And if that decision cannot be made by the department, bring it to the Board of Supervisors and let us make that decision. As I said yesterday, when I go to the community and with you or with your staff or without anybody else, and the first word is out there, well, we don't have the money, it's too expensive, I'm going to stop hearing that to the point that tell me why it is expensive. Tell me, give me the figures, and let me take that responsibility from that moment on. Otherwise, just sit there looking very stupid because I don't know. And maybe because I didn't ask the question. I am asking the question now publicly, as I did in several meetings with the department, with the staff. Appreciate all the hard work you have done. The time has come to put it in black and white and us make that decision and take that responsibility publicly. So when we're out there, because we hear from the public, and most those who deal with figures probably in a 4x4, disconnected. And that has to be taken care of ASAP, whatever the direction is by my colleagues, because this is not just an issue in Nipomo. I've heard from folks in Templeton who similarly are very horse-friendly, equestrian-friendly. We need to put an end, take the responsibility not away from you, but share the accountability with you to say, you asked for it, here it is, in writing, in black and white, tell us where to go with this. And let us make that decision for you. And when we go to the public, we know that we're the ones who gave you that direction.
Well, I'd like to explain a bit about the estimate that you got for the benefit of the rest of the board members who don't have it in front of you. We have an estimating tool we use for facilities. If we're going to get a new park, we're going to get a new trail, whatever it is. It's based on about four or five different professional standards, industry standards for what it takes to landscape planters, clean walks, clean restrooms, so forth. And it's essentially a spreadsheet. It's a matrix that we plug in the size and the frequency and the need and the cost of labor and so forth to generate a cost. And that's the model that we've used for trails for years. We tried to refine that to share with you exactly what that looks like. There's no question that there are some things that we do that we can supplement significantly with volunteer labor. Last year, we had about 50,000 hours of volunteer labor, and you saw some of those at Cuesta Park last month. And frankly, my feeling is that with a little bit more energy, we could probably double that without breathing hard. But there are still issues, the tree planting you alluded to in the Pomo, where we really didn't want to have volunteers with chainsaws cutting down 80-foot dead pine trees. Likewise, with this work on the trail, there are certain things that, from a risk management standpoint, I think is still important that we have either our paid professional staff or professional contractors. Our model is based on the fact that most of these are around developments, particularly in the Pomo, where we have eucalyptus trees that are in excess of 100 feet, and they're going to need periodic thinning and pruning. Not something I'm comfortable with having volunteers do. We do chemical edging of trails. Volunteers aren't really too keen on pulling poison oak out of the sides of the road. So Bob Jones Bike Trail is a great example where our staff, who in this very regulated and very safety-oriented task, are doing spraying. The inspection of those trails, even if we had volunteers doing all the litter pickup and cleanup, I still need my staff out there putting eyes on them from a safety standpoint, and our model is predicated on just every other week somebody getting out there and having a look at the conditions. We also know that our trails, because they are not, they're built of basically native substrate in many cases, we get a strong storm come through, we're going to have repairs. And if we need to wait 2 months to get the volunteers together to marshal, those sort forces, we're still going to need to buy the decomposed granite or the materials to replace them. All those things are woven in. So there are opportunities to reduce our costs, but there's no question that there's some baseline that we can't do it all with volunteers, and we are a big believer in them. But we also recognize it would be irresponsible of us to tell you guys we could do it without any cost whatsoever. So could we shave that number from 5,000 a mile? Probably so. Economy of scale, as we do more trail and longer trails, probably so. But we have to base that on the predication that we're going to have to do some heavy lifting ourselves. That's where our numbers are coming from.
Mr. Janney, in Ipomo, we had licensed arborists that were willing to come do the chainsaw and that part of the work where they even offered to show proof of their insurance. But that's done and behind us. When we're talking about equestrian trails, it can be planned so that it doesn't have the eucalyptus tree in the middle of it or on the side of it.
But that's where they are today is the problem. And this particular...
Yeah, but when we have such as Knollwood, what do we have that's stopping us from taking it over? What kind of obstacles do we have that's going to be that expensive for us to maintain 2 miles of equestrian trail?
Well, again, we could come to you and accept it today and just absorb the incremental cost we have. And they might be not 5,000 a mile. It might be 1,000 or 2,000 a mile. The work that ultimately has to be done by park staff. And it's what I refer to as being nibbled to death by ducks. At the end of the day, we're still dead. It's that little bite by little bite. You guys all saw that list of trails, and it's extensive. They're throughout the county. And if our strategy is going to be we're just going to take them in and figure out how to pay for it, I would submit that that's one of the things that pushed us out on the edge of that dead limb. Is stretching and stretching. We need to have some basic resources to get some of this work done. Can we get more efficient as we do more of them and work more with volunteers? We can find space for a volunteer coordinator who could be working, marshaling those people and coordinating them and overseeing them. You bet we could get more done.
And that's what I think I'm asking for you is to put that list and come back with an estimate attached to it and let us say, go for it or not. And that's what my argument has been all this time. You folks bring us as decision makers. This is why we're not performing in the nature of trails or golf courses. You did an excellent job with the golf courses bringing it to us. You didn't say we don't have money. You put it right on our lap. Why don't the trails are being treated the same way? Have we even tried to have an adopted trailway?
We do that quite a bit.
And this came up this Saturday. I was talking to an organization, as you're aware of them, Save the Mesa, and came up. Those are programs that need to be in place. What I appreciate, you're putting this inventory together, and I would hope that we here give you direction to come back on a given date as what is it going to cost for us to have a budget in place to take care of what's in here and what cannot be taken care of by just giving money away, is go to the community and say, if you're a partner with us, we'll accept all these trails on a condition understood, accepted by your department, by our council, by the Board of Supervisors, and let's move it forward.
And we'd be happy to do that, and I think it would make sense that that be part of this comprehensive look at trails we bring to you, because even accepting of those easements should come with the notion that one day we'll want to build trails and figure out how to provide for the maintenance of those trails.
And I don't want to go out much longer, but I've been talking. I don't want to do that. I want to bring it to a decision. Give us a date that you can come back and say, here's the list as you gave, and thank you for that. You gave me an estimate of roughly what the cost is. Attach that to the miles of trails to have, and let us make that decision. And then if you were need to tell the public you did your share, I'll be behind you 100%, and let me take the blame for either giving you the green light or the red light or the yellow light.
We could certainly do that. You got the two-day turnaround on that. We can provide you with two options. Here's what it costs if the volunteers never come through or peter out after a year or two. Here's what it would cost, what we and Mr. Lindholm's office will be comfortable with us farming out to the community.
Yeah, I don't mind if the volunteers at one point quit on us for us to block it off ourselves.
Don't misunderstand. I'm not saying that because volunteers quit that we wouldn't use volunteers. I'm just suggesting that we know the cycles that don't always count on them.
But then the issue is of less importance for me to go to the publicly and say, you failed.
We didn't.
We didn't. But till such time, and I want to stop talking about it and get into action, and I'm asking you as a board member to bring me the stuff that I need to make a decision based on it. And then...
We can do that.
When?
Well, again, we were proposing that we bring a comprehensive look at our trails. To me, that's the appropriate time to do that.
And when would that be?
I don't have a time certain for you today because, quite frankly, we're still looking at the inventory. You saw a list, a partial list of what we know is out there. If we're going to do this, we'd like to capture 99% of those offers of dedication and not have things slip through the cracks. I think we'd probably be back to you late summer, early fall.
And late summer, and there'll be other issues for me to, and this is going to be on the wayside where I'm not going to be able to remind if it doesn't come in front of me, and I'm going to look very uncomfortable.
Well, we have hundreds, perhaps thousands of trail users that are reminding both you and my staff of how important this is. I mean, we have no intention of letting this go, but we can do it quickly or we can do it properly.
But as simple as till that time, can't we even take a brand new trail that has been offered to us, such as Knollwood, and where the maintenance is at the bottom?
Well, the list that I gave you was predicated on having volunteers doing much of the daily grunt work, going out and picking up litter and sweeping up after windstorms and so forth. I can sharpen my pencil. I can tell you it's not going to significantly change that 5,000 a mile unless we decide to lower our standards.
Yeah, but I need to come up with a date.
If I can.
I was going to ask Pete a question then. I was going to go down. We've got four lights on here. Mr. Jenny, I appreciate, you've got some additional staff work to do until, let's say, the fall or September, but it would seem to me that we can use some of the programs, and I use the partnership that we did on the Bob Jones Bike Trail with some inmate labor, with some other people like that. Is there a way that we could take a sample or identify a couple of trails, a portion of a trail, create a pilot project or program this summer, something we could get an opinion from county council to say, between Supervisor Asaj and myself, we have a certified tree arborist that will take out a couple of trees. We have a certified whatever that will do some other type of work. Let's see if we can put those people in together on target in a specific area and see if we could try something out, hopefully, to see how successful it's going to work. And that's part and parcel to your budgeting process. But actually what we would do, I think, is we would get the momentum out there where people would say, well, it's going to be another study session. It's four more months. It's a staff or bureaucratic process where I think what Supervisor Asaj is saying is, let's see if we can get something together we can do now, and hopefully success will breed success, and it's going to sell the program and the concept this summer. Is there a way we could do a pilot project? Because Adopt a Highway and things like that, it wasn't a national standard before they tried it out in certain areas. Will it work in the rural area? Will it work in the urban area?
We have two opportunities. One of us ahead of us right now is Knollwood, and Vineyard is right around the corner. We could bring those to you, and I understand we're probably looking at July anyway before you have available dates. For an acceptance, and we can do our best in the meantime to find people, volunteers who will do tree pruning that are certified, and maybe we can find volunteers who can do our pesticide or our chemical spraying who are certified. I'd be more than happy to do that. So we can try to bring something back to you. It looks like the earliest we could do is probably early July.
September 25th.
As long as we have August 13th.
There's 30 minutes on August 27th is what there is.
Make time on the agenda go longer.
What day do you want to touch?
September. I don't think September would be bad.
Okay.
I mean, we'd be happy to bring it back as soon as we can get on the agenda.
Supervisor Sargent, were you done with your comments?
Madam Clerk, will give us a date. We'll come up. Now, some of those areas that we're not accepting it because whatever. And I'm going to apply the philosophy I had when we built the library in Oceano. We knew that we were come through this kind of red tapes. What we did, we built it, then we gave it to the county. When we, such as Knollwood, can we as community go do what it needs to be done, then can give it to you?
The trail construction is not the problem. It's the ongoing maintenance. That's the gift that keeps on taking.
And again, and number of those trails that I've seen and been on, you know, I can figure out an engine and car. I can look at a trail and say how much maintenance it's going to need. Some of those are not even questionable that I can do it with a tie and a suit on.
Well, again, this trail maintenance is not rocket surgery. It's something we can do. It's something we can do with volunteers to help us. All I'm trying to convey to the board is there is a bottom line. In my professional estimation, 35 years of doing this, there's no way we're ever going to be able to do it completely without having any taxpayer dollars.
No, I mean,
that's
correct.
Just not if we're going to maintain safety standards. Can we reduce it from 5,000 a mile? Maybe we can to 2 or 3,000. There's always going to be some cost associated because we're always going to want to have professional staff involved in, if nothing else, inspection of how the work is being done by those volunteers and coordinating their efforts. So we'll come back with our best case scenario as quickly as we can get on your agenda.
Okay, we'll move along. We've got four people who have been waiting patiently to ask questions. Supervisor Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Assuming that we're settled on the question of Templeton and the Pomo at this stage,
in the conversation I'm hearing right here, we've gotten this discussion back and forth, what we think we can or cannot do, and I think what this board's trying to say, come back and let's start looking at a comprehensive volunteer program to cut the costs. And that's what I think needs to be said. And what we're looking at right now is what we're going to accept in trails in September and this comprehensive program. Let's get out of the BS about who's doing what and how. That's what we want. And let's get it done. And that's what I was trying to say.
Sure. And I wanted to bring it back to, you know, discussion of the budget in particular at this point. But I would note, in line with what Supervisor Ovitz said, if we go to the Parks and Rec element, I know one of the things that the Planning Commission in our consideration of it did suggest and did try to beef up was a more formal interaction between the Parks Department and its volunteers, and whether that takes a volunteer coordinator, a volunteer coordinator, or paid volunteer coordinator, or whatever it is, there seems to be two paths that we are to go here, and one of them is to try to increase the effectiveness of volunteers, or, and we may want to propose this in parallel, the formation of a parks district. And I know that discussion is going to come up as we go along. It's been successfully executed in other counties, and it gets, I think, into a very honest discussion of whether the residents of a particular jurisdiction are willing to pay for the amenities that things like parks and libraries provide them. Second point here is just, I know you're in the process of putting together the inventory of offers yet to be accepted. Do you have just ballpark, how many miles of trails do we have in the system? How many miles of offers ballpark do we have waiting to be constructed and accepted?
And I don't have a number off the top of my head. I would tell you that it's probably hundreds
of miles.
Yeah, because much of what, and understand the issue is that in a chain of trail this long, it's this piece here, this piece here, this piece there.
Right.
But I couldn't, off the top of my head, I couldn't tell you what it's looking like.
Okay. Unless there are other issues specific to trails on this, continuing in the parks vein, let me just give you a quick update on the question of the park.
You want to get off the...
Supervisor Sargent had it to show.
Yeah, I had more on trails.
Yeah, before I get off the trails and my high horse.
On the trail.
On the trail.
Happy trails.
Happy trails. Do we have a date confirmed now, Madam Clerk?
Well, as Ms. Wilcox said, you can bring it back to any board meeting date, but the board meeting dates that currently show any time on them are August 28th and September 25th.
How much time we have on either one?
Well, the 28th, you have 30 minutes. You have over 100 minutes on September 25th.
Let's do September 25th because it will be
long.
And I'm also, Ms. Kerr, we have a planning commissioner, park commissioner. We have Mr. Leib, the head of the department. I hope with your cooperation as well that we give Mr. Jenny a hand to help him any which way he needs to bring this forward as simple and as possibly that even we can understand it and make it happen.
Well, and I can assure you, we would like nothing better to double that volunteerism that we're talking about. I think 100,000 hours of volunteerism would do wonderful things for our program and great things for this community. So
I'm going to let my horse rest until September.
I'll second your motion to move it to the 25th on trails and volunteer.
We have a motion and a second. All any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Carries unanimously. Supervisor Gibson, did you want to continue on to something?
Just a brief comment on the question of departmenthood for the Parks Division as it stands right now. Supervisor Patterson and I have participated in what we're calling a working group, which includes representatives from the admin office, representatives from the Parks Commission, Parks Commissioners, and Mr. Leib of General Services, and I can't recall, and Mr. Jenny is as well from the Parks Division. We've held a couple meetings. The first task at hand was to analyze the financial implications of breaking off parks from a division to a department. And while there's a range of cost, we settled on the idea that to simply move parks to a separate department tomorrow would incur a separation cost, let's call it, of about $300,000. That's $300,000 plus or minus $100,000. That would largely account for that amount accounts for fractional positions that would have to be allocated as whole positions in a new department, changes in salary, and a certain amount of overhead and other issues. By its nature, a somewhat imprecise number, but let's say it's $300,000. At that point, the working group could not come to the conclusion that immediately establishing the Parks Division as a department could be recommended at this point. But I think that there's interest in continuing that discussion. I for one, understand the conceptual attraction of doing that, and we do have examples of other jurisdictions, in fact, other counties, who have reseparated their parks operation into its own department in recent times. So the work plan ahead of us now is twofold. One is to gather information on the experience of those other counties to see what benefits we could identify in terms of a separate department. And the second is gone back to the Parks Commissioners, perhaps the Parks Commission as an entity, to come up with a series of procedural points that they believe are important to improving the execution, shall we say, of our parks program as it stands now within the Department of General Services. So the Parks Commissioners are going to be coming forward with a memo to the working group indicating that they would like to see this, that, and the other things in terms of procedure and technique that would be applied to the management and the execution of the parks program. And we might formalize that in some fashion or another. So as of now, the question of separate departmenthood is still being considered but not being recommended for establishment at this point.
On hold, in other words.
On hold pending evidence to proceed.
Supervisor Patterson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to pick up on what Supervisor Gibson mentioned. I think we have come to the conclusion that there is some benefit to having the autonomy of a separate parks organization. But again, what we are doing now is looking at the hard costs in doing so and the benefits and how a new parks department would be organized, and it is an ongoing process, and I think over the course of the next several weeks we will be looking at those issues and coming to some sort of conclusion. It won't happen in this budget cycle, but we are continuing to investigate it, and as Supervisor Gibson mentioned, it hasn't been uncommon for jurisdictions to merge their parks and beaches department with other departments for primarily financial reasons, but then when those issues are reconciled, it's been very common for them to separate them again, and that's precisely what we're doing as we're looking at other jurisdictions and how they have gone through this process and what the outcomes have been. So we are studying it, and we'll continue to do so, and we'll be back to the board at some point in the future with a recommendation.
Thank you. Supervisor Ovett, your light was on, but then it went off. Did
I just if we're going on these things and Eric Greening brought it up, and I wanted to, I'm not asking for money or anything else, but the issue is with Templeton Library. Every time I see things about libraries and it's discussed, Templeton's not discussed. There is funding in the capital projects, monies we put aside for a couple of libraries a number of years back for planning and architecture, whatever. The reason I bring this up, and I think it needs to be begin to put in the radar, is primarily the building permit is pretty well done. And I know that the community is going back out to confirm its fundraising that it had done earlier. And it is my understanding the community's goal is to build the actual physical building. They have it almost ready to go for construction. And so the other issue that the community is going to have to deal with, again, is this operational issue, which I understand. But I just kind of want it in the language and in the radar because it's getting very close to the community putting done. And again, for your information, Templeton is a community of about 4,000 to 6,000 people. It has no library. And we've been able to work with the school and everything else to get the land, and we now have the permit pretty much done. So I just want to get it on the radar.
Did you want Mr. Reynolds to come up and elaborate on that?
If he wishes. I think he understands where I'm coming from because he's been in contact, or they have contacted him as we've gone along this process. But it's going to happen, and I just don't want us to leave it to the side. And I'm not saying it takes any higher priority than any of the others that he's looking at in terms of Tascadero and some of the others that are up there. So,
Mr. Reynolds, I saw your head nod up and down in the affirmative motion. Did you want to step forward and make any comments or elaborate on the Templeton issues or anything else? Sometimes it's helpful to have the department.
Thank you, Chair Lindahl. Brian Reynolds, County Library Director. I was working my calculator. Whenever I hear libraries discussed, I start working my calculator. We have a variety of capital projects in the pipeline. The reason Templeton hasn't shown up officially is that it is not now and has not been a county project per se. Years ago when the community approached me about that, and we were working with Harry at that time, I asked them if they wanted it to be a county project with county oversight, county sponsorship, or did they want to try to do a homegrown project, and that's the path they chose. So they have a lease with the school district. They have a piece of land near Vineyard. The money that Supervisor Obit referred to was about $50,000 from our public facilities fees that was earmarked for the architectural services and other things like that, archaeological activities. And as far as I know, those have all been concluded. They have a viable drawing. The archaeology tests came back mostly negative, and I heard from Gwen Pelfrey the other day that they are now going to get into serious fundraising. And I was just multiplying on my calculator 4,000 square feet by about $450 a square foot construction cost. They probably could do it for less. So we're probably talking $1.5 million they need to raise. I think the timing of our library summit in the fall is fortuitous because we'll be gathering people from all over the county, including Templeton, to talk about how they can make their libraries stronger and better. And so after the summit in November, there will be homework assignments that community teams will work on. And it's pretty clear to me that every set of homework assignments will be different. Tascadero, as Mr. Greening mentioned, needs a much bigger library. Templeton needs a library, and so forth. Cayucas will probably be looking at going to the school property in the next year or two. So I would imagine that this will all be folded into the same discussion. I hope to be bringing to your board a draft of these activities that we'll be taking then to the summit attendees, probably in September, October, working with admin on that. And then a year from now, we would have that strategic plan in close to final form for your board to consider at budget time, or maybe just a little bit before. So I'm rambling a little bit, but we have a big picture in mind. We don't have the money, but I'm going to be optimistic.
Honest man.
Mr. Reynolds, other than the money, can you use or develop some type of more attractive or enjoyable term other than they'll have a homework assignment? I think if it gets people involved in the library, when you say a homework
assignment, we're calling
assignment,
it a vision
negative
document.
Connotations.
A vision document.
There you go.
That they can get excited about, enthusiastic about. And because, as Supervisor Gibson has pointed out, the vision and the enthusiasm may lead to money. We hope it will. by way of grants or possibly the cities or districts stepping up to the plate for their libraries. We're very serious about addressing the volunteer issue. I've talked to your board about the three-legged stool issue, where for a bigger, better library in a community, the three legs of the stool would be our own budget, the general fund perhaps, and the community. And on the community side, it doesn't just have to be the T word about taxes. It can be volunteerism, it can be grants, a variety of things. And so to summarize, once we develop this vision document and teams of more active supporters and marketers in each community, we're going to have a product that I think people will be excited about. And it may not lead to money, but for sure it'll be better than what we have today.
Supervisor Patterson has a question on your homework assignment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Reynolds, we call these libraries city-county libraries, and I like the idea of a summit because communities, whether they're incorporated or whether they're an unincorporated part of the county, many of them are moving forward with either expanding their libraries, building new libraries, improving their library services in one way or another, and it's really, for the most part, coordinated through your department. And what I've observed is that people aren't talking to each other about what their plans are. And since it all sort of funnels through your department, I think it's important that we do have a conversation about what everybody's wants and needs are, because we can't satisfy all of them at once. And I think it's really important that we establish a priority. And when you have the summit, I think it's essential that you invite members of each community, particularly members of the incorporated city's elected bodies, because they will ultimately be the ones that contribute in one way or another. But theoretically, the contribution is supposed to be equal from the cities, the incorporated cities, and the county. Are you getting that kind of participation from the incorporated cities that you're working with currently? I mean, do they recognize the fact that they should be contributing in one form or another to the ongoing operations of the library, as well as actually creating the libraries within their communities?
Well, I have to answer that from a historical sense and allude to an event that took place before I came. I came in the early 90s, and supposedly when the San Luis Obispo City Library blended with the county library in the early 70s, they required or demanded that we change the name of the county to the city-county library system, which at that time, as I understand it, no city contributed towards at all. And even today, the city of San Luis Obispo gives us about $14,000-$15,000 a year, and that only goes back about, of cash to operate, that only goes back about 6 or 8 years in history. So it's a bit of a misnomer to call us a city-county library, because the cities don't participate. And, of course, about the time our library started taking off in terms of expansion of buildings, expansion of programs, staff, Prop 13 came right in the – oops, I said it. I wasn't going to say it. But Prop 13 came along, and that changed the financing totally of what your board could set property tax rates prior to that. We didn't have to have elections that win by a two-thirds majority. So that changed everything. And I think it changed especially the dynamic of what other entities were willing and able to do. Prior to 1978, when Prop 13 passed, the cities didn't contribute cash to the operating budgets of this countywide library system. And after that passed and other events have come into play, I've always felt it was desirable but that the cities would play a role. It's in their interest to play a role, but it would be very easy for them to say no. If I or even just a small group of citizens went and said, this is a good idea, you need to, as our county administrator would say, well, we would like libraries. Well, City X might say, well, how many policemen would you like us to lay off so we can have a better library? So it is, in the post-Prop 13 world, somewhat of a zero-sum game, and I don't need to tell you that. People want services, but they don't want to pay. But I'm thinking and hoping that with the summit raising the level of interest in libraries, that strong libraries need to have a role in creating strong communities. We don't want to lose what we have, the habits of books, reading, all that stuff. We need to keep that going, and we're relatively cheap and very well-used service. So I'm hoping that there will be, in each community, whether it's a rural area or an incorporated city, enthusiasm that will build into some sort of compelling mandate for a city council or a district board to do something for their library. And it doesn't have to be substantial. It doesn't necessarily have to involve an election. But I mentioned the city of San Luis Obispo. They give us about $15,000 a year. They're also committed to paying for major repair projects on the city library just two blocks away. The city of Atascadero, about 3 years ago, established a public facilities fee for library construction. I've seen a financial report in Morro Bay where that a consultant prepared where they're discussing that as a possibility, possible revenue source in Morro Bay. So there's movement there that is very encouraging, and I'm hoping that we can have that conversation be a dialogue and not just me saying I need more money and them saying no. That's
Thank
a
you.
Kind of a rambling answer.
No, I appreciate that.
Supervisor Rowe, do you have a question?
I just wanted to conclude because there's a couple things. ERAF was the other thing that bit into you besides Prop 13, which basically took away property tax, which completely funds 90% of his budget. The other thing, there is one community called Paso Robles that's taken the library responsibility on its own. So, and the last thing I wanted to say is my intent, there is a work program or a works capital project based on that money that was dedicated. We're not asking for funding. I just wanted to, again, put it on the radar that the communities got their permits, they're ready to go, and they're going to fund and build it themselves.
And then sublease it to us. That's
sublease
the plan.
It back because they're also working with a school. So there's it's a multi-partnership on it. But it's going to happen. And with Gwen in front of it, you know it's going to happen. So.
Yeah, they're very good people there.
They had pretty much, as I remember before we got into the permit situation, pretty much materials already taken care of to build it, and they had volunteer people that are going to do it. So that's what I just wanted to put on record.
Thank you, Mr. Reynolds.
Thank you.
Supervisor Asajjan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. Wilcox, would this be the right time to bring the airport issue, or should it go under capital projects? Or do we take the issue off? Is it 9.25 or is it 10 million?
You do it here. Might as well do it here. Capital projects comes later. I think it's at the end of the session. We actually have to fund the 9.25 or the 10 or whatever the number is.
What is your preference?
We can do it here. And actually, Jerry Seabach's here, so he might want to address. When we last talked about this issue was at the May 29th special session, and which I think we concluded that from now on we're going to tape those public sessions so we can remember what we said in the motion. But one of the things you did tell us to do is go off and develop a plan for repayment. And although we haven't had a chance to meet yet, Jerry Seabach, your auditor controller, what he's proposing, as we've talked with us about anyway, and the airport staff, is basically issuing a bond for the full $15 million. And the bottom line is it doesn't matter what the number is, 9.25 or 10 or whatever. If we issue a bond for the full $15 million and then we use the parking fees, basically what's available, as we move forward into time, we have to see what the market will bear in terms of parking fee increases. But the difference between what's available from the parking fees to pay for the debt will have to come from the county as a loan. And Jerry, I don't know if you want to elaborate a little on your proposal.
Mr. Seabach, would it be a play on words to say you're the man with a financial plan this morning?
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Jerry Seabach, Auditor Controller. The previous proposal had been a request from the airport and general services folks for a $10 million grant to pay for part of the park of the construction of the parking structure. Parking structure is about a $15 million. They were going to borrow $5 and use $10. Your board met and gave direction that you wanted that to be in the form of the $10 million or the $9.25, whatever it was, in the form of a loan, and you wanted to be paid back in a, I think the term I remember was an aggressive fashion or something like that, which was kind of undefined. Well, based on that direction, though, I started thinking about it and came up with the idea of
borrowing the entire $15 million instead of borrowing five, borrow the 15, and leaving the 9.25 or the 10 in cash available committed to the airport project, and I'll explain why we still need that money. But this would, this doing that through borrowing would allow the time to be paid back on the 15 to be 30 years. So they'd have a fairly long, much longer period of time to pay back than your board had desired, I think. So that's to the advantage of the cash flow on the airport side. It also leaves, as I said, the 9 or the 10 in cash to be used during the construction period of approximately 5 years. There's times where, several times, where the county will have to expend significant money and hopefully rapidly get it back from grants or from other borrowings. And it's quite a complicated thing, and we're still working with Klosch and her consultants to fine-tune that and understand exactly how that works. But I'm pretty certain that we will have a good use for that 9 or $10 million to cover temporary cash flow problems during the five-year construction. If everything works out according to plan, then at the end of the five-year construction, that 9 or $10 million would be freed up. It would be back in the county's treasury to be used or lent for some other project if it was necessary. And the payback for the parking structure would be part of the entire financing for the airport, and it would go over probably a 30-year period of time. And we're going to be looking at how to stage that and everything. So that's a proposal. I think it's, I believe it's has it's a very viable thing. We're working now on, as I said, getting some actual numbers from the bond experts to see how much per year and whether we can maybe ramp it up so that there's a lower payment in the early years, a little higher payment in the late years, which would also help the airport's cash flow problems. So that's the proposal. That's my recommendation, that you leave this money in as proposed in the supplemental document, either 9.25 or 10, as appropriated for airport use. If we can do this borrowing thing, then we'll still leave it as appropriated, but we may only be using it on a very short-term basis during the five-year period of construction.
Mr. Seebach, if I may, how is that going to affect our credit rating or our loan-to-value when we're talking about putting an extra $15 million out here for bonds, and we're looking at some other bonds and some other things?
Well, as I said, there was the plan was to borrow 5 of the 15 anyway. This is 10. Also a key element was your board's apparent willingness, as expressed at the May 29th meeting, to raise parking fees on the at the airport in some amount, which would help pay that back, the $10 million part. So that's another key element I forgot to mention. That increases the cash inflow and should cover the problem for the over a 30-year period fairly easily.
So would it be safe to say that this not only improves our cash flow, but this gives us a little more flexibility on if we choose or have the opportunity to get more revenue, parking goes up, it's a good year to accelerate the payment, but we control both sides of the equation rather than having something locked in another form?
Well, you would be locked into a minimum amount of payments over the 30 years, but, yeah, there would be provisions that at a certain point you could accelerate.
And would there be a prepayment penalty if we all of a sudden got aggressive or found some other things?
Typically, as long as it happens after 10 years, there's not a penalty. So you would, 5 of that is going to be easily in construction.
Sure.
So I think it does provide flexibility and safety as far as hitting a temporary cash flow problem in the middle of the construction period was something I was very worried about from the beginning on this thing because of all the multiple financings coming in and out from all over the place. If somebody was late on a grant coming through just by a month or two, it could cause a lot of problems.
Thank you. Supervisor Gibson?
Just a quick question. This would be general obligation bonds for $15 million?
No, Supervisor. These would be what they call lease revenue bonds. They're similar to the COP, which was used for the Paso Robles Courthouse. But they're not a vote. They don't require a vote.
Okay,
of people,
and they'd be.
That's your question.
Well, that was a little bit of it, but also they are tied to the enterprise fund, the enterprise nature of the airport. Then it sounds like
the primary source of payment would be the airport. But again, your board had expressed the willingness to support the financing with general fund backing.
Right.
So that would still be there. Okay. We hope that that isn't necessary. That wouldn't be necessary to call on the general fund to actually pay.
Supervisor Patterson?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I didn't get a clear answer to Supervisor Linthal's question about how this overall impacts the county's
rating
status in terms of borrowing money. I know originally we weren't going to actually increase our debt. We were going to use reserves, and now we're actually going to be increasing the debt. Is it significant?
I don't think it's significant in terms of, as long as we really put together a package that shows us as having reliable repayment sources, an amount of $10 million additional shouldn't be a problem.
Okay. And also, the airport, and Klausia may want to respond to this, this will increase the cost because we'll have the added interest that they wouldn't have had otherwise, and it'll be over a longer term. So is that going to pose a problem, or we just offset
that? Yeah, let her respond to that, except I will say the interest is expected to be fairly low in the neighborhood of between 5 and 6%, but it also stretches out over a 30-year period, which is quite a bit longer than your board had been talking about as wanting to be repaid. So that's an advantage.
Okay. Thank you.
Ms. Wilcox, did you want to go before Klausia comes up? Because I'm sure Klausia will generate more questions and comments from staff.
Sure. Well, I'm sure Klausia also will agree with this, and I'm just going to put it out there. It's a question that came up when Dwayne and I were talking in the payback, the aggressive payback, whatever that is. You want principal or principal and interest, and that might answer the issue in terms of the additional cost they'll bear by having the whole thing issued as debt. And in terms of just to clarify, we are still recommending that we cancel the 9.25 from reserves and move it into the newly created capital project for airport parking structure or airport expansion. I think we are going to do a separate one for parking so we can track them. We still think you should take that out of reserves now because, as Jerry said, it's a pretty complicated formula and they need the money in there for cash flow purposes. And so they will earn the interest on that money. And if you decide that they don't have to pay you back, interest, then that could be, the offset, clearly, to the debt issuance costs.
Supervisor Roberts, do you want to go ahead, or should we have Klausia come up?
Well, I just want to, this debt ratio issue, and I'm trying to find it, and when you read these documents, it's in there. I know that we talked about basically what our debt ratio is currently, and I went back and looked at Treasurer's report, and this V+1, as I understand it, says it's almost like saying this county has a commitment to repaying its loans, which gives it a very high rating. But our debt ratio, I don't think, goes over 5%, even with this added in there, because we're four, less than four. And the red flag really doesn't start till, 7 or 8%. So we're still staying down in the low numbers.
Yeah,
debt
the ratio. $10 million wouldn't get us anywhere close to 5%.
Oh, so
what we're worried about is overpasses, interchange, pension bonds, the rest of this stuff, the jail, all the other borrowings that are coming, could be coming.
Thank you. Thank you for waiting, Klausia. I just don't want you to have to get up and down while we go back and forth. So.
No problem. Good morning, Supervisors. Klausia Nairn, County Airports Manager. When Jerry first presented this $15 million bond idea, I kind of jumped out of my skin because I thought, oh, God, all this interest and bond financing requirements. But actually, when we ran it by Jacobs Consultancy, it actually is a pretty good scheme. And I congratulate you for that. And I mean scheme in the most positive sense.
I have the paramedics on standby here. Mr. Seaback is holding his heart.
I meant that in absolutely the most positive sense. In fact, I even said that in an email to Jerry. I actually think it's a pretty cool idea. And obviously, it depends on if you want to charge us interest on the $10 million. If you want to, give that to us as a no-interest loan, that is certainly the best way for us to go. But it does stretch out the repayment issue to 30 years. It kind of, and the way I've been able to figure it out is that we actually have a positive cash flow beginning in the year 2012. And with somewhat of an aggressive parking fee increase, but nothing that's going to cripple us or going to take chase people away. So I really think it's a rather good idea. I like the idea of setting the money aside in a reserve so that when you do need money for cash flow purposes, and we will, there are going to be times when we're going to be a little upside down, but I think it actually is a very formidable idea, particularly if we can get it at the interest rate that was projected by Lehman Brothers in a meeting that we had a couple of weeks ago. Just based on those short discussions, I think it's an idea worth exploring. But to have that $10 million as kind of the money in the checkbook would be incredibly helpful.
And I think one thing, if I may, and I had a conversation with Dr. Edge about this last week, that it does give you a little more flexibility or wiggle room, that what we want to do in this is position you for success, obviously, in the airport, not for failure. And I think there's an option here that in a couple, 3 years, when things turn around, that we'll be hopefully pleasantly surprised that we'll be able to pay this back at a quicker rate than we had originally anticipated. And I know that was one of the goals, and I'm paraphrasing Supervisor Gibson's comment. But to me, it seems to be, if nothing else, a better business plan, and especially for you and general services in the airport in general.
It really gives us a freedom at a certain point in time where we kind of can govern ourselves, and we're not strapped to an idea where we have to pay the general fund back on an annual basis at either 10% or 15% of our parking revenues. It pretty much gets us on a good footing in a pretty short order, and I think that's a good idea for us to explore. And I'm hoping that you actually follow Jerry's plan, because I think it's a good one.
Thank you. Supervisor Patterson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just like to suggest, as we talk about how this is going to be structured, that currently the county is receiving interest on that money, that $10 million that's going over to the airport. And while you have it in your account, you'll be receiving the interest on it. And I think that it would be to the airport's advantage and to the county's advantage to stay revenue neutral on that anyway. You're going to save money over what you would have to borrow, but I would like the county to at least get the interest that it would get if it were in our account, so we don't lose money, and it would be a small incremental cost for you, because you're going to be getting interest on it until you use it anyway, but at least the county would stay neutral.
We're hopefully going to use it pretty fast.
Supervisor Asajjan?
Are we clear, Dan, that $10 million is in the checkbook, or does that require a motion here today? Or?
I don't think it matters.
Chairman, we're using 9.25. It really doesn't matter. The discussion that's gone on between 9.25 and 10 really is an irrelevant discussion. Your board has approved and told us to move ahead with a project that's estimated at a total cost of $15 million. We anticipate around $750,000 accumulated in the bank by the time we're ready to go with it, which if $15 million is the exact price when we bid it out and everything else, means we got to come up with another 14.25. So to the extent there's been a discussion about was it 10 or was it 9.25, it really doesn't matter at this point. 9.25 is fine.
In terms of Supervisor Patterson's comment, I mean, if you maybe split the difference, if the board's decision is that they don't have to pay back, it's an interest-free loan, then what you could do, obviously it would be a double benefit to them than if it was not only an interest-free loan, but that we move the money into the capital project, because then they get to, I can't imagine how much interest you earn on 9.25 or $10 million, but I mean, I know it's a lot of money, so you might want to keep it within the general fund, move it to a designation, just like we did for the women's jail, a designation, well, that was within capital, but a designation within the general fund. We have a number of them, and then the interest would continue to accrue in that fund, but it would build up, actually, and the 9.25 would become 10, actually, wouldn't take that long. And then basically we're just going to make up the difference between parking revenues and whatever the debt service is, and we can take it out of that fund.
Mr. Chairman, maybe just let staff work out the details here.
So moved.
No, Well, I'm asking because what we would be asking in the capital projects portion of the budget hearings was to move the money into the project, which is not a general fund budget. It's and it would accrue in that in the project.
Mr. Seebach, if I might, and in class, you don't sit down in case somebody else has a question for you, but could you, I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but just give us a 90-second overview of use as the last jail expansion, how we did this. There may be a way that we're making this more complicated than it really needs to be, and I appreciate Dr. Edge's comments letting staff work it out, but just explain the process, how the money's there, it would actually sit in this account. We know it's going to be spent relatively quickly, so how that interest, because it might be nothing more than just a simple bookkeeping issue that the county would never lose anything, but I also appreciate the fact that the money is available in an account that could be spent, you know, on a couple three signatures notice, so timing is critical, but kind of review that process for us, where you set it aside in a special account, whether it's a general fund account or not.
Well, we have done it different ways. The difference about this one is this is an enterprise operation, and they have their own funding. For example, if we were doing the last jail expansion, that's a general fund operation. So the interest does there isn't any question about where any interest goes. We have a thing called the Capital Projects Fund, and we would move so many million dollars out of general fund into the capital projects fund. The project is spent out of there. Interest during the construction period accrues into that fund. So it's fairly, that's the way it would work. In this one, we have to run it through the airport enterprise fund because they're going to own the assets, and there's accounting principles that kind of require us to do that. So my expectation was we would keep the 10 in a pot over here, the borrowing would go into the construction, be used, and as they needed to draw on, if they needed to draw on the 10 for cash flow purposes, we would move that over as needed and probably pull it back when they didn't need it. So there really isn't going to be a lot of interest either way. I don't think the interest during the construction period is going to be a huge thing. Again, as Kalasha said, that the construction expected to start very rapidly and take only less than a year to complete, I believe. So it really is an interest-free loan if it's needed from the general fund. But I'm saying that's going to be over the entire five-year period of the overall construction. We may be moving 10 million parts of that 10 million back and forth during that time.
So when you say not a significant amount, some visions would probably say that you have $1 million here, and we're getting 5% on it, so that's $50,000 a year times $10 million. That's $500,000 a year in interest. But we really aren't, because you're not putting all that money into one account, and also $10 million is not going to sit there for a whole year and not be spent, at least a portion of it.
I believe that's correct,
Supervisor Patterson.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. The way Mr. Seebach described it, I'm happy with that. I thought if we were giving them $10 million. And they would. It is an enterprise fund, and the idea was for the enterprise fund to pay for itself and not encumber the county. And that's what I was concerned about. If we were loaning them $10 million, just to have available, the way Jerry Seebach described it, it's fine with me. It'll stay in county control until the airport needs it and move back and forth. And I think the interest would probably be rather insignificant at that point.
Supervisor Asaja?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think Mr. Seebach's explanation was satisfactory. I don't have to ask my question, which was going to be that it's only fair if we're going to loan them $10 million and charge them interest at and since it sits in our own account, at whatever interest it earns while it's sitting in the account, that becomes theirs too.
And I would only add that the manner in which he describes it gives us the clear vision of the fact that we had committed up to $10 million and we'll know when we're whole and we're done. So okay. Let's do it.
Move forward.
Dr. Rich, we need a separate motion on that, or is that going to come up this afternoon then?
Actually, I was just going to, if there's no other questions on any of this, move for the...
Tentative. Yeah. We got some more lights here. Supervisor Gibson?
I had one question to the farm advisor, if we're done with the airport.
If we could just have time over the break to figure out exactly, we're trying to figure out, if you want to cancel the reserves, the money's got to go somewhere. So we have to figure out exactly where it's going to be appropriated. So if we could have a couple minutes to talk about it over a break.
I was just curious,
if this stayed in the actual reserve fund that's in and the money were moved in and out of that same fund, what would be the difference?
Have to come in four votes every time to take it out. And
the easiest thing is set up a designation. We're coming back on capital projects anyway. Let's do it. We'll do it over the break.
That's what I understood,
I don't think we need to do more than we've already got on that.
Okay. Before we take a break, Supervisor Gibson, did you want to talk about Farm Advisor?
Just a quick question to our Farm Advisor. I noticed in their position for obesity issues, and I was curious to know how that position coordinates or is expected to coordinate with the newly created one in the Public Health Department, which is in the same building, actually.
Ms. Bianchi?
Coordinate rather well. I'm Mary Bianchi. I'm the Horticulture Advisor and Acting County Director for the Farm Advisor's Office, and there are differences between the public health position and ours. The public health position focuses on coordination of obesity prevention efforts, including public policy and working with the Obesity Prevention Task Force and other important coordination efforts among agencies. Our position is program delivery to clientele, and so it's educational in nature. The goal is to curb overweight and obesity in a targeted population, 6 to 8 year old children and the significant adults in the children's lives. So it's much more educational program delivery to our communities.
And I assume that position in your office had participated in the task force proceedings?
Shirley Peterson was involved in the task force.
Great. Thanks.
Ms. Wilcox, was a staff light on left from before? And I don't want to interrupt your important caucus over there, but I don't want to cheat you out of a chance of...
Great minds at work. Mr. Seabach says basically just appropriate the money into the tax reduction. We'll just treat it as a budget. We'll work out the details. And 9.25?
Yeah,
9.25. Well, I think we need to clarify that because Supervisor Sajjan made the motion and he said it was $10 million. But I hear Dr. Ed saying that it's a moot point at this juncture.
Yeah, really. You're either going to use, if you put $10 million in there, you've got, and it's an exactly $50 million project. Then you're either $5 million short or $4.25 million short. What we're saying is 9.25 is fine. You don't have to change it. If you want to put 10 in there, that's fine. You're putting $750,000 more than you need. If you want to do that, that's fine.
Clausha, would you like to respond to your preference?
I would agree with Dr. Edge. It doesn't really make any difference. Even if you were to take the parking revenues and keep them flat, the maximum amount that we would ever draw, the way my calculations have worked, and they were kind of rudimentary, but I did get there, is that the maximum amount we would ever draw from that fund would be about $4 million if the cash flow comes in as we anticipate it would. So we could actually be pretty whole. So, again, I don't think it makes any difference at 10 or 9.25 if we go with the scheme, the plan.
Oh, I like that.
The plan.
Auditor, controller, schemer.
The plan, as suggested by Mr. Seabach. So.
You're happy.
Yes, I am. I'm happy.
Okay, let's move forward.
Mr. Seabach, can we refer to you as the man with the financial plan instead of the scheme?
Yeah, thanks. I like scheme.
Supervisor Ovett?
I'm just going to go back and make the motion that we approve community services budgets as presented.
Second your tentative motion.
That's always tentative motion.
Always tentative. The tie, I think Supervisor Patterson was the loudest in the second, so we'll have a motion by Supervisor Ovett, seconded loudly by Supervisor Patterson. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Carries unanimously, and we're going to take a 16-minute break. Welcome back. This is our second topic on the second session of the second day. Ms. Wilcox?
Okay, the budgets before the board for consideration at this time include the fiscal and administrative budgets. That includes the administrative office, organizational development, the assessor's office, the auditor controller, the board of supervisors, the clerk recorder, and the treasurer tax collector. And there are no supplemental budget document items on in this group.
And as I'm getting a flurry of speaker flips, would you like to start off, Ms. Wilcox? And any more, or shall we want to go to public comment? Supervisor Sajjan, do you have preference either way?
I can respond to any, yeah, I don't know what the public comment is, but I'm happy to respond to any questions.
Mr. Chair, my comment this morning was we usually have staff reporting before we go to public comment, but it's a different hearing, but I'm okay in which way you want to handle it.
Well, I don't think any of those public comments happen to do with any of this piece. If you look at them,
hey,
they have to do with the next function.
How about Eric Green?
Thank you, bye.
Mr. Green was the only one. His was fiscal and administrative. So.
Fleet services next. Services.
So, Eric, if you'd like, how about if you lead off? You're going to be our only speaker, looks like, on this.
Thank you. I am Eric Greening, and I have a question for Ms. Rodewald, who I guess hasn't come in yet, but hopefully.
She's right there as we speak. Just take
very
a
good
deep breath. And
ah.
Now ask her. Ms. Rodewald, as she steps in the room, ask her the question.
All right. Well, anyway, I am Eric Greening, and obviously in the wisdom or whatever it is of the legislature, we are saddled with three full-scale elections in the year 2008. And so obviously that, you know, they're going to be pretty much at a dead run throughout the year. In addition, of course, any of those elections can have various local measures of different kinds on their ballots. As someone from Atascadero, I'm well aware that initiatives, referenda, et cetera, can come up at any time if they get enough signatures. And there seems to have been quite a bit of differing notions as to when it is a city's responsibility, when it comes back on the county to deal with the costs, workload issues, et cetera. And I guess my question is a little bit broader because it goes beyond just incorporated cities. Under what circumstances do locally based initiatives, referenda, recalls, or whatever, create unanticipated fiscal situations for the county? And how is that avoided? In other words, how are the jurisdictions where these things occur actually made to shoulder the costs? Perhaps a little bit of clarity there would help us all, both with current situations and any future situations that may come up in our county. And I guess I'll end with, I think, what's been ascribed to Winston Churchill. It's going to be, we'll probably get tired of elections in the year 2008, but democracy is the worst form of government except for all the others. And I'm glad that we're we're exercising democracy, and we'll have plenty of opportunities to do it in the year to come. And I trust we'll have the continued good service from our county clerk recorder, even when they have to run.
I think they're in very good shape, Ron. Play on words there.
Says you get shin splints.
When they run or when they're running, correct, Eric?
Right.
Thank you. Supervisor Asajan?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question to you or staff. The items in front of us, any guess estimate as how much time would it take? The reason I ask that, because most of the request to speak belongs under the next portion of support to county departments for fleet services, and I was wondering if we should
make
a chance
now and get this out of the way.
Okay, so it will be that quick, in other words, this portion? Okay.
There are no significant issues in this group of budgets. If you want us to address the specific question that you have, we'd be more than happy to answer.
I tentatively move we approve the what's in front of us. I would just want to wonder the gentlemen who have here to speak if they needed to wait now or come back in the afternoon. That was the whole idea.
Probably do it this morning.
Okay.
Is that a motion?
Supervisor Patterson, I think before we get too far in the motion, we had some more lights to speak here, so I don't want to jump the gun.
Motion dies for lack of a motion. Second, I guess.
Supervisor Patterson?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to get a clarification on the staffing. I understand the increased staffing for the Board of Supervisors is to take on some additional functions that the administrative office is currently doing. In other words, bringing our budget back in-house is one of the examples I was given for the increase. And you're shaking your head, but that's what I've been told, and I'm curious to know if that isn't the case, what is the case?
Increased workload in the Board of Supervisors office. There has been discussions about this position taking on some of the budget oversight that one of our staff is doing. I think after meeting with Chairman Lenthal, he believes that it would be important to at least maintain that connection and have the person who's in our office as a check on the budget. But basically, it's increased workload, and Fran, in particular, in your office, has been talking about a huge backlog that she hasn't been able to get to, and a couple of the legislative assistants have been very concerned about their workload, and that was the genesis of this request.
Okay, so then there will be some additional tasks, but otherwise it's primarily to handle the existing workload. And the reason I bring it up is if currently admin has been taking on some of that budgetary or all of that budgetary responsibility for the supervisors' office, and it was my understanding that that was going to be shifted.
Yeah, it's the budget itself is not complex. What your existing staff does is they monitor it now. We simply put the budget together for you and ask what it is, what changes you want, and then do monthly reviews with both the individual in your office and the chairman to make sure that you're on course. But the person who handles that said that's maybe, you know, an hour's worth of work every week or two.
Okay, fine. Thank you.
And I think one of the things that was a key element of this is this half-time position will allow us some flexibility where now we have a real challenge for shift coverage, especially on our busier days. It's no secret that on any given Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday, they're the most heavily impacted days. And by having Fran, we work half-time. It allows us to do some shift loading if we know somebody has a training schedule, a training request, a vacation, school, or sick, that we will have coverage. Because right now, and for the last year and a half, we've been borrowing from admin on a case-by-case as-needed basis. And I'm not saying that hasn't worked well, but this is a better program. And this will allow us to basically control the schedule from our perspective and do some budget things, but still have admin do a lot of the heavy lifting and hold all of the accountability. So it's not a real major change.
Thank you.
Supervisor Gibson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had a question for both our auditor controller and our treasurer tax collector, which has to do with the staff positions that are recommended for funding to support the county's financial system, the SAP system. And my thought was, not having been here when we chose to implement that system, but what I understand of it is it's meant to make us more productive. And in the way the augmentation requests are written is to handle increased workload resulting from the implementation of the SAP system. And I was curious as to know a little bit about whether the system is actually increasing personnel workload and whether we're going to be seeing more staffing requests coming forward on that. There was one position in each department was noted here.
Mr. Freitas, did you want to lead off?
I'd be happy to lead off. Mr. Chair, Frank Freitas, Treasurer Tax Collector, Public Administrator. I think the effect of SAP is not the greatest effect of the need for this particular staffing. It is a part of it. It's a complex system. But I think what you do with SAP, and Jerry can speak to that much more effectively than I can, is that it does a lot more than the old systems and does things that the old system couldn't do and, in fact, will ultimately provide a lot of reports and documents that are needed. So, but as far as our office is concerned, the positions that we're looking for will do help in the Treasury operations as well as, for an example, better review on investment programs. We anticipate that we could fully fund the program from additional interest revenue. There's just by 3 basis points change, which is 0.03% will fund the position. That position would have no impact. The other position, there's a volume increases we're looking at. We switched people to cover IDM, which is a new program that the county's using. So we're using that. We've got a big increase in return mail. a lot more supplemental bills and the complexity of that. So our public service area is taking more energy in order to keep up with the demands of serving the public. So it's a combination of shifting some people out of tax for IDM, which is the Integrated Document Management Program, which eventually I think will pay off in terms of less staffing and more accurate information available to the public and to the staff. Any other questions? Or?
Not of that one. I just curious, Mr. Seba, as I understand it, SAP sort of comes from your department, and overall over the county's entire effort, is it going to require more staffing to serve that system? And if so, what are we getting from it?
Well, thank you for letting me go second. That way I can correct whatever Mr. Freitas said.
And Mr. Freitas, you will. I appreciate that. Mr. Freitas, you will have time for rebuttal here at the end, so you're not done.
Now, the position of the Treasury Tax Collector's Office, I understand, is not primarily because of SAP impacts, but other workloads. Mm-hmm. Countywide, this was a countywide project. I was the sponsor and headed the steering committee, but it is a countywide system, and the productivity that we are looking for and that we have already experienced is countywide in all across all departments. It's been fairly successful in the outside departments. The General Services is probably the exception. We're still working with them to try to work kinks out of it and get the efficiencies out of it for them that we had all hoped for. But in Public Works and some of the other large departments, it's been they have been pretty happy with it. Our department, it's not the implementation, it's the maintenance of it that we're having trouble with. Our goal is to not use consultants. So the one, and we still have a couple of consultants that work regularly helping us maintain the system. Our goal with this additional position that we asked was to, at least to some extent, be able to reduce our reliance on outside consultants. It's cheaper to use our own people, and in the long run, it's better because we can cross-train and we're not dependent on outside folks quite as much. It is a very complex system. The other thing that's happened is there's been increased demands, for particularly in the HR payroll side. There's three huge components of this system originally are what's called procurement. That's requisitioning, purchasing, payment of bills, financial, cost accounting, and general ledger and all of that. And the third is human resources and payroll. We never had an integrated human resources payroll system. We had a payroll, and they really didn't have anything in human resources that was automated. So they made a major jump forward. But the day we came up with HR payroll, we were already behind in terms of things that the negotiations were producing. So the day we started under the HR system and payroll with SAP, we already had retirement changes, other benefit changes like the cafeteria proration, which has saved the county quite a bit of money on part-time employees. Several more pension adjustments have happened, and just other things that are continually being negotiated. So we have a big list of stuff that we're constantly chipping away at, and some of them are mandates that we can't even defer. They have to be done by a date certain. So the one part that we've been disappointed in, as far as I'm concerned, is the amount of workload required to keep the system going. It's not so much to keep it going. If it would stay as designed, it would have been a lot easier, but it's a moving target all the time. Every time there's a new contract or some new mandate that comes down, we need to program the system and get that. Another one is the cellular phone thing we talked about with your board not too long ago. That wasn't anything anybody anticipated. Nobody wanted it. But it is a fairly complicated thing to implement, and it takes staff to do that.
Okay. And just in the spirit of results-based budgeting here, is there tracking of productivity gains countywide on the basis of SAP?
No, we don't have a way of tracking them countywide. Every department has their own experience, but we know things that used to take a couple weeks to process, for example, a requisition to a purchase order, sometimes happen within an hour through the system. If it's a standard one that's been done, they have inventory maintenance and control in the Public Works Department that they never had before. So there's lots of things that are there that were never before. As Mr. Freitas stated, it does more things than were done before.
Thank you.
Mr. Freitas, was that an adequate explanation, or did you want a chance for equal time or rebuttal here?
That's why I voted for him.
You see, I got a new job responsibility now, schemer.
Bring that back to the board.
Mr.
I see you, board.
I just wanted to say one thing that I'm I don't know if there's enough discussion on it. I'm not necessarily in favor of the half position in the Board of Supervisors. I think that there's adequate work there, and the reason I say is that when we did the reorganization to come over here, we dropped one complete position. Actually, we moved it to admin, and there was an understanding that there would be a shared responsibility and that there is a pool available for coverage. But I'm not totally convinced that there's that much workload that's going to require half position.
Well, after sitting through several meetings and looking at what happened last year with Supervisor Assagen and working on this year, I respectfully disagree. I think there is the workload. There's a tremendous backlog of things that just haven't been taken care of that need to get taken care of at some point in time. They just don't rise to the level of being, you know, an emergency or something that people say, well, you haven't got this done yet. The other thing is we've lost a real opportunity to have some flexibility here, and I think this halftime position is going to bring that back, and it's long overdue from my perspective.
And Mr. Chairman, I would speak in favor of it as well, largely from the means of unburdening our legislative assistants with some clerical things that they now handle. But I think in at least in my case, in the way I view a legislative assistant, she is devoted to constituent service in the district, and the less clerical work that she's burdened with, the better she can serve the residents of District 2.
And I would add that your legislative assistant was our secretary for about a year and a half, and she was a big part of this and certainly knows firsthand the workload and what needs to be done out there. But before I move on, another one that I had here for the Board of Supervisors on 100, and I brought this up last year, and I'm going to see if my colleagues want to support this. I know there was a cost of living or whatever percentage it was. We went from our discretionary funds from $25,000, I think, to $26,300 on a four-point-something-or-other formula. And I know that especially in the tough times, and if we look like there's a cloud on the horizon with the economy, the demands and the requests we get, whether it be from nonprofit, community service groups, where we're trying to just have people get by or put Band-Aids on different programs, that the demands are going to increase. And I'm going to ask again if we increase that $5,000, and that will be my motion if I can get a second for that.
That actually comes tomorrow. Under CBO. That's tomorrow. That's not under this.
Excuse me, I stand corrected. Thank you. Yeah. Supervisor Roby, you were going to make a motion, you said?
Well, I was going to second Kotcher's. I just want to let my feelings be known about the half position, because predominantly I will guarantee you that my negativism is the reason we got rid of the one position is that one position wasn't needed, and that person didn't have enough to keep that position full all the time.
And that was certainly
burdened by the fact that we have a person that's half-time and only prefers to be half-time. But I'm not going to stop the process. I just want to let it be known I'm not adamantly in favor of that halftime position.
So
I'll second Cacho's motion.
Okay. Supervisor Gibson, as you want to talk, I know your light's still on. Supervisor Patterson, did you want to talk?
Going to say I did have a conversation with our staff, and they are of the opinion that there are things that aren't getting done that should be getting done, and they feel that having the additional help would be beneficial for them and certainly for us as well.
Motion by Supervisor Assagen, second by Supervisor Ovid. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Carries unanimously. Madam Clerk, would you introduce the next item, or Ms. Wilcox, would you want to?
The next group of budget support to county departments, it sounds like
And before we go any farther, I don't want to cheat Ms. Rodewald of a chance of coming.
No, I apologize. I don't think that Mr. Green had his question answered, and it doesn't really have anything to do with your motion. But
you're absolutely right, and you came in just at the right time, yeah, so please take a moment to
answer his question. In terms of the February election.
Julie, would you introduce yourself for those who are listening in Washington?
I'm Julie Rodewald, County Clerk Recorder. We're still hoping that there will be state funding for that election in the same fiscal year as the election is held. As to local jurisdictions that request us to do their election, which means it's consolidated with an already existing date, they are responsible for the cost of that. The Los Osos recall, Los Osos CSD paid the cost of that. If Atascadero's recall or referendum go forward, they will pay for the cost of those of us conducting their election. If it's a separate election, particularly with the cities, they're often responsible for conducting the election on their own just because of our own workload. But if we do conduct the election for a local jurisdiction, they are responsible for the costs.
Thank you for stepping forward, Supervisor Rowan.
There's an interesting thing, and we just sent somebody down to your office to do this, and it really doesn't have anything to do with the budget, but it's probably a service that we're going to be looking at in the future. The advisory committees basically set up their own procedure for elections and that kind of stuff, and I know I want to say thank you because we had one that came in the other day and asked, what are the boundaries and what kind of procedural issues? So it's something that keeps coming up all the time because sometimes they change and turn over and they don't know what the boundaries are.
Right. And the other thing that happens with the advisory councils is sometimes they write the rules and then ask us for help in applying them or interpreting them, and it does put us sometimes in a difficult position, but we do the best to help them as we can.
Thank you.
Yeah. Sure.
Thank you for stepping forward and reminding me of that. I apologize for that. Ms. Wilcox?
Okay, the next group of departments is support to county departments. That includes county council, general services, fleet services, reprographics, information technology, human resources, risk management, and self-insurance. What's your pleasure, Chairman of the Board? We can do the ad issue item first. I see you have a couple of comments, or we can run through the rest of them and then...
Since we've had most of the people here waiting for the ad issue and tying up a lot of resources, I'd like to deal with that first.
Okay. Would you like to do public comment first or have Mr. Lai present, and then we have a short PowerPoint?
I think we should go through regular staff. Mr. Lai, would you like to start off, and then we'll go through, and then we'll have...
You want me to go through it and then listen to staff, or listen to staff first?
I think you should start off.
Take a moment to bring up a PowerPoint here. Yes. Yes. I didn't do it.
Nice sound system.
They didn't turn the sound down. We're on board.
I'll make sure we have our PowerPoint here, or I'm going to be stuttering through.
You do a song and dance while you're waiting.
Ms. Wilcox, if I may, while they're waiting to do their technical adjustments.
You want me to sing with the music? No.
Come along. This is the first at issue that I think, well, that I participated in. I'm sure Supervisor Patterson and Gibson as well, so... Could you maybe spend 30 seconds and go over this or just review the process or the ad issue formula or order of movement, sequence of events, and things of that nature for three new members?
As your board is aware, we spend a lot of time, departments and county administrative office staff, between the months of January and end of April, in discussion and negotiations over the budget and finite resources, et cetera, et cetera. A lot of time on the part of departments and administrative office staff. Typically, we reach agreement. Every once in a while, we don't, and the department disagrees with our recommendation and brings that to your board to see if your board will approve the additional resources that are not being recommended this time. Typically, the department head will present, and the administrative office will comment and then public comment, and it looks like you have a few people here from the garage to talk.
Thank you. I know that's helpful for myself, but also people that are watching or listening that have watched for the last 3 years, they may not understand what an at-issue process is, so I appreciate you explaining that. Mr. Lai, are you ready to lead off?
Yes. Thank you, Chairman Linthal, members of the board. Thank you, Gail. I am Dwayne Leib, General Services Director, and I feel like I have to apologize for coming at issue. I've had 27 budget presentations with the as General Services Director. I've only gone at issue twice. This is the second time. I can tell you it's not a very pleasant experience. Not many people want to do this. Someone said to me yesterday, I understand you're going at risk today. I sometimes feel that I'm a little bit at risk. Yesterday when the slide came up about at issue, somebody started a chainsaw outside, and we thought that was a premonition of things to come.
Remember, we used to look at the marquee across the theater to see what the day looked like.
Right.
The abyss and some of those things.
In those 27 budgets that I participated in, I was used to what I call a lot of FaceTime. It's meeting time. And the difference this year and why we're at issue was there really wasn't an opportunity to have that FaceTime for a variety of reasons, not the least of which is my own illness and some of the illness of staff. We just didn't have time to sit down and meet. My actual FaceTime, my meeting time, came late in the process. The administrative staff was very sympathetic and showed me a lot of courtesy as I presented it, but unfortunately it was just too late in the process. The budget had gone to print. So that's why I'm here at issue. I have two issues that I feel fairly strongly about, and we have people in the audience I think feel equally strongly about. Just as a quick overview, this is very, very difficult to read, but this is the organizational chart for the Department of General Services. We'll just concentrate on the yellow blocks. I'm at the top, General Services Director. We have George Rosenberger right below that. Jim Gator, who is here working the PowerPoint this morning, is our department administrator, and we have five divisions, which has been talked about often. We have a property manager on the far left. That's Karen Madeline. That's Real Property Services. Building facilities manager, Mr. Robert Bada, is here. Parks manager, Pete Jenny. Flipping over to the far right, we have the airports manager, Klasha Nairn. And the one I want to focus on today is fleet manager, and Spence Graft is in the audience also. This is the division chart for fleet, 13 employees. We basically have four working mechanics. We also have some hands there that when we have heavy needs, they throw their wrenches to the needs. Okay, Jim. Number one issue is the customer service space at the garage. The fleet service operations is responsible for the acquisition, surplus fueling, maintenance of the county fleet of vehicles, various pieces of equipment, including compressors and some of the road equipment. This includes a centralized motor pool for all county departments, and it has a value of over $15 million. All county services, including public safety and health, use the fleet. The fleet services shop is the main focus for our number one priority here. The main shop services the fleet. It's located on Highway 1. Was built 34 years ago, 1973. George Rosenberger was here at the time. I think he remembers it. At that time, the number of fleet vehicles serviced was 179. Today, we service over 1,000 vehicles and pieces of equipment. The customer service area at the shop is now due for an upgrade in order to handle the increased number of vehicles and, most importantly, our customers who come out to the shop. This is the shop building. You can see the service bays. Both on left and right. What I want to focus on is that center door. That's where our customers enter, and this is the area where we have some space needs. It's a small door. It says service entrance, customer service, but above it is a sign that everyone's very proud of. It's one of the best 100 fleets in North America. That's a distinction we won 2 years in a row. Last year we were number 12 out of 100, and that's all of North America. The customer service area is the prime area of concern. You'll see in the next slide, it's a very small area. It's inadequate for the number of people that come through here. We have service writers, we have mechanics, and of course we have customers going through there, and they kind of bang into each other. So we're looking to expand this by another 8-foot by 16-foot section. It's a very modest expansion. It would be the first remodel in 34 years, and the estimated cost is $80,000, which also includes remodeling the interior section. So advance the slide. The gentleman on the left has paperwork sitting on the service counter. The gentleman on the right is trying to access the files, which we have records for our vehicles and employees. There is a computer station in the background. It's the faster station, which these service writers and employees use. The reason this is somewhat of a staged photo here, but this is often the problem, the conflict of getting into the files with the two service writers behind the counter. The door that we showed on the outside is the light up to the left. That's the entrance door where the customers come in. Next slide. This is looking from the door towards the front of the service counter. We have a mechanic and a service writer interfacing there. The service counter is also where we take in our parts. We don't keep a large stockpile of parts on site. We have NAPA out there, too, in a separate building, but the parts come through that main door, and they're transferred back and forth over the service counter. Next. This shows the side door. We have a mechanic trying to get in the side door from the shop area, and you're looking at two people standing on the service side, and you can see that the door interferes. It's such a jammed, tight area. This is looking from the outside door from the shop area, looking into the area. You can see how the door impacts anybody standing at the customer counter area. This is a quick rendition of what we want to do. Jim, if you could use the cursor to show that existing outside door, it's that one right there. We're planning on putting an addition on the front of that building for the customers to keep the customers separated from the mechanics and the service writers and the parts delivery. And then we have a side door, which still comes in from the mechanics area into a greatly enlarged office area where the service writers, the files, and the computer are located. So we would have separation from the clients and from the service workers and mechanics. This is about 130-square-foot addition, which includes about 290 square feet of remodel for a total of $80,000. This is your board capital project, the criteria that you adopted in your budget. We initially went through the capital improvement process, and we were rated as a Category 4. You can see that the project is at least 80% revenue offset, or there is a payback in 3 years or less. There's no payback here. We were looking at the 80% revenue offset, and we were looking at interest earnings off of our cash account in the fleet. We collect cash for depreciation. We collect cash for mileage rates that goes into an interest-bearing account. Years ago, we used to collect inflationary supplement. We don't need that anymore. We found out when we go to buy a new vehicle, if there's a price increase, we can take it out of the interest earnings off of that account. So it appears that there's more than enough flexibility in that account to take $80,000 out. If we ever came up short, that account and the rates are adjusted through rate studies periodically. We don't anticipate that $80,000 would be a significant impact. If you depreciate that over 20 years in a 5.7 million mile user base, it comes out as a fraction of a cent. The difference here, if you can go back to that slide, the difference here is that there was we did get approved in the capital project as a Category 4, but there was a revisit to the funding source, and it was determined that if that's general fund money, it really isn't a Category 4, and I think that's the crux of our disagreement here is the funding source and how it gets rated as a capital project. So in conclusion, for this number one issue here, we need the space. We think it's important to support the jobs out there and to accommodate our customers. Now, we can have questions on this one, or I can move right into the next one.
I think what I'll do is I've got four lights lit up here, Mr. Light, if I could. Why don't we just let the supervisors ask you questions, and once we get people up there, that will keep hopefully folks won't have to get up and down as much, and we'll just
okay.
See if we have the end of your questions, and we'll move on to the next speaker. Supervisor Asajian.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Leib, is there any other master plan for this location?
Sorry?
Do you have a master plan for this location for future expansion?
No. The master plan is just to, we add a trailer here. We added a storage building at one point. We consolidated with Public Works, which is a continuation of that particular building. We do not have an overall master plan.
Looking at the entryway, and I know what it takes to be a mechanic physically, but you can always hire a person that could be on a wheelchair, even though I've seen mechanics on wheelchairs. Are they able to enter that through that door to that area?
If they were in a wheelchair, no, I don't think so.
So you don't have wheelchair accessible?
No.
Have you ever?
If we remodel, we can certainly make the doorways and the counters and everything to accommodate that.
You have to comply with ADA.
Yes, we do.
But as we speak, you're not.
I don't think that is
Because I think the way your cabin...
The side door is the one that you're talking about. The front door is. I don't think the side...
Where your customers enter.
Yeah. The customer door is the outside door, the inside door, where you can see how it impacts with people standing there. I think that's a...
Because even if you walk into a snack shop, the way they put their market their products, there's got to be enough distance for a handicapped person to be able to go through, which I don't see that is the case here.
Right.
Have you ever been visited by Cal OSHA?
No, not for that one.
That will raise a lot of red flags.
Well, we could use some support here so we can modify it.
That's
Supervisor Robert?
Yeah, I was just trying to figure out the relationship to the trailer. The actual fleet officer manager's office is in a separate unit?
He's in a separate unit. As you walk out of the front door of that customer area, it would be towards your left on a 45-degree angle, a short walk across the yard.
So this particular request you're doing is servicing just basically the riders and the actual mechanics themselves.
Right. It's in the building where all the activity takes place.
Mr. Light, if I might, I know that $80,000 you said is not a lot of money, and I could appreciate that, but I was just doing some math up here in my head and thinking we're enlarging something by 130 square feet, and that would mean it would be about $650 a foot.
Actually, well, you have to.
But we're also remodeling. We're also remodeling an additional 290 square feet. Is that $80,000 a good number? I mean, is that something that?
Yeah, I wouldn't mind revisiting that number again, but that's the number we do. We do a quick estimation process every year for the CIP, and it's not to our advantage to lowball it.
Right.
We try to make sure that we have enough funds and to do an adequate job, and if we don't, it goes to a fund balance.
Okay.
And don't need all that money.
And in the report, it's not real specific, but I assume that probably the majority of that $80,000 will be in the remodel and not in the additional construction of the square footage because it's basically a steel or a Butler type building. Is that correct?
I think that's accurate.
What type of remodel and what type of additions, since it wasn't in the staff report, would you see taking place here as far as, you know, how would that money be spent?
Well, I'd have to defer to maybe Bob Botta, who looked at the estimate on this thing, but we have to move that service counter out. We're going to have to make some door modifications.
Basically going out to
the outside of it, I think there's a concrete slab, so I'm not sure about the foundation work. I don't have the estimate in front of me to defend. I'm sorry. I don't have
that. That's okay. Ms. Wilcox, are you the staff light here?
Sure. A couple things. Relative to ADA, first time heard that, and certainly if that's an issue, the department should have checked legal mandate, and as Dwayne just pointed out, that didn't indicate. So if it in fact is an ADA issue, then one option is we take the money allocated for ADA. We have a pot of money in the budget for ADA, so that's a surprise, but certainly if we have a potential violation of law, we should address it. Secondarily, there's one concern that my staff and I have expressed is that in terms of the folks that work out at the police shop, we recognize that they're a great performance, and unfortunately in some of this communication, we believe that part of what the message has been sent is that this is a reflection on their performance, and that's absolutely not true. Clearly, we have some staff who are not in, or at least they don't believe, are in sufficient space. And as we indicated in our response, besides our concerns about the auditor's office not being sure this is an appropriate use of funds, maybe we've mitigated that now by saying we'll use ADA funds. But we followed the board direction in terms of the criteria. Again, there was no mention of ADA or any legal mandate. There was discussion in the justification of savings, which was not ultimately provided. So sounds like this could be an easy fix if, in fact, we can verify ADA in terms of we'll just have to use the existing pot of money, but that's a possibility. David, you want to?
Yeah.
Dr. Edge, then Supervisor Assange.
On the ADA, it's pretty straightforward, and unless the law's changed in the past year or so, and I'm sure it hasn't. Basically, if we do a remodel project, we'll have to make it ADA accessible. The existing facility, which clearly, I think from the pictures, suggests it's not ADA accessible, that's not an issue. ADA doesn't require you to make those changes as long as you could accommodate a person who has a disability in some other way. And you can see clearly, again, from that setup, a person has an example in a wheelchair that came to that customer front door. If they couldn't get in, could handle the transaction at the door, and that's okay. But my understanding would be that if you make any significant, and do I think you and I would be together on this one, any significant, even relatively minor remodel requires ADA kicks in at that point, and you have to.
I hope it's not a surprise to everybody that the county is not 100% ADA compliant. It's a moving target. We always have funds that go toward it. It's primarily complaint and investigative driven, and the highest priorities first. In looking at the pictures, I think the front door is ADA. I don't think the side door, and that was the issue, obviously coming in from the mechanic bays into the parts area.
Yeah, I think what we've got, Ryan, if we don't touch it from an ADA perspective, so, which is not the main thrust of Duane's presentation, from an ADA perspective, if we don't touch what we've got, we're okay. If we do decide to do a project, I think we will need to incorporate ADA accessibility into that project.
And if I may, Mr. Edge, just that part of the project, or would that inquire bathrooms and everything else that's at that physical building? Because sometimes I've aware that once you pull a permit, they say everything on site must be brought up to code. So it would be, you know, other things, bathroom, workstations, and other parts of the building.
Yeah, that's getting beyond my general knowledge of the ADA perspectives, and we'd have to ask council to take a look at that.
It's, your operation has to be ADA.
Actually, the restrooms were ADA, made ADA compliant several years ago when we had a female employee out there. We separated them out, so the male and the female restaurants are compliant.
So to your understanding, Mr. Leibman, it's just basically a door or two or some access issues?
My rudimentary understanding of it is that, but Dr. Edge is absolutely correct. When we do a project, that's when you have to comply with all ADA requirements.
Mr. Sivak, were you going to elaborate on the ADA, or holding your financial plan under your arm?
The question about possible problems with the funding, the use of the fund, since the supplemental document was submitted, we looked at that a little more, met with Mr. Leib and his staff. There are some issues with that they need to do some cleanup work as far as going back and looking at how their replacement reserves match up with depreciation accounts. But as far as the legality of using the funds, I don't think that, in my opinion, there's no issue of using garage funding to do this project. In fact, for my part, it would be better to use a garage, if it's $80,000, use money out of the garage, then that they can recover the $80,000 through a small increment to charges to all departments over a period of years, rather than tapping the ADA reserve, which is basically a general fund source that wouldn't be paid.
Supervisor Sajjan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have not seen those pictures prior to this here this morning. That's why the first thing when I look at that door, ADA came to mind. And we talk about customers. We have a gentleman within Public Works who operates a vehicle that does use his wheelchair if he's obviously one of your customers.
Right.
You're not allowing any entryway to your place. And I didn't mention Kalosha with a sense of humor. When I saw your mechanic, which anymore there aren't mechanics, they're technicians. You have to be certified in everything you do on any given vehicle. It requires education, computer knowledge, certification. So my hat's off to anybody that can look under the hood and know where everything is. If that bottom drawer is left open and somebody walks in and trips over and falls down, that's a hazard waiting to happen. That's why I mentioned Kalosha. And any one of us in any kind of business can be hit either by random, them coming around, or one of your employees calling in.
Right.
So those are serious issues for me. It needs to be addressed. And however you can address it, it has to come with a dollar figure, and we have to figure out where is it going to come from and make it happen.
This project would address those issues.
Supervisor Gibson.
Well, I guess what I was struck by the per square foot costs, even if you count for 290 square feet, and I did not see the actual bar on this particular one, and I don't know if it was fleshed out more fully. But I think the issues being raised here as to the completeness of this project, ADA being new, suggests to me the need to revisit it and bring it back before us in more specificity for a particular possible budget adjustment at a later time. But it seems to me that looks like there's some unanswered questions here.
If I could address that. When you get into design, all you have now is just a sketch, and it was just done for estimating purposes to establish a budget item. When you get into design, you do address all those ADA issues very specifically. And Bob Botta just touched me on the back. He's our architectural expert. I think he's got something to say about it.
Mr. Botta, are you going to render an expert opinion for us this morning?
I'm going to attempt to, yes. Robert Botta, Facility Manager, General Services. I just point out that the cost of the project, as Duane says, is at first a relatively rough conceptual cost, but it, if you're looking at it in terms of cost per square foot, you really can't do that comparison. It's total project cost, bottom line. So that's the cost also to do all the construction documents, to bid it, all the staff costs necessary. It's the year that may occur afterwards to do any callbacks or warranty. So it covers not just the construction, but it covers every cost that we think is going to be necessary to deliver and operate this for a year. In terms of the ADA, we're aware that what we build, what we add on, has to be ADA compliant. We don't have to go and make staff spaces alone ADA compliant until there is a disabled person working in that space. Then we're mandated to do that. Certainly, it includes the estimate includes ADA for the addition, and I think it'd be very wise to do that to make the garage ADA compliant, because it could not just be technicians that work there that are disabled, but customers that frequent that could be disabled too.
And Mr. Botta, if I may, you're comfortable with the $80,000 figure that it's not going to turn next week or next month into $180,000 because of some unknown ADA requirement or some?
No, I would be very, very surprised and unhappy if that happened. But I do think what we're trying to present the board is a number that would realistically deliver the project with all costs and that we wouldn't have to come back and ask for more money on.
Thank you, sir. Supervisor Robert?
Yeah, I was just going to make a recommendation. He has one other ad issue that he wanted to present. Maybe we should hear from the public and get into what we're doing now as a discussion on this issue. Just to keep the thing moving.
I concur.
Okay, Jim, do you have a PowerPoint? The second issue is staffing. This concerns adding another position. The increases in mileage and additional vehicles means increases in necessary vehicle maintenance. There's a direct correlation. You drive more miles, you're going to need more maintenance. While the county vehicle mileage has increased by over 65%, let me repeat that, 65% during the last 3 years, the number of total staffing at Fleet Services has remained unchanged. The fleet shop, which services the vehicles, has also remained unchanged. This is the graphic display of an increase in the last 3 years of over 2 million miles. We start, and this is post consolidation with Public Works, so Public Works is not part of this. This is just the overall miles have grown from 2003-04 to about 3.5 million miles to our projected closure this year, about 5.8 million miles. Despite the increases in vehicle mileage and additions to the fleet staffing levels, they remain the same. They now service over 1,000 vehicles and pieces of equipment, and they offer servicing of vehicles in North County. That's something that is a critical factor here. In the last year, that big mileage increase of over 1 million miles, about 1.2 million, a lot of that and the vehicles was over the grade. We used to send a mechanic up there on a daily basis with a service truck. It became so popular, we stationed the mechanic up there. There's only one mechanic up there. The demand is great. It saves our clients the trip down the grade, all that travel time. It's saving the county a lot of money. But the demand is so great that we have to send another person up there, and we're doing that now, but it takes away from our capabilities at Kansas Avenue, and we're really getting pushed. In order to keep up with the demand, we need an additional equipment mechanic, and the reason I say equipment mechanic is our intention is to put an equipment mechanic over the grade to help the existing equipment mechanic, who I think is here today. That equipment mechanic can work on all vehicles, large and small. If you send an automotive mechanic, you're restricted to the lower side of things, so it's much more flexibility. If that one equipment mechanic is gone from the North County, there's nobody there to interface. You come in with a vehicle, there's nobody there to say what's wrong with it. if he's called out on a service call, if he's taking a lunch break, or if he's sick or on vacation, there's nobody out there. Besides that, there's a safety hazard, and I think we have some slides to show you in here. This is our staffing levels. It's remained flat for the last 3 years, actually longer than that, 13 full-time staff. Of that 13 staff, there's 8 mechanics. Staff began servicing vehicles for county schools in off-peak times. This helps keep the county costs down. If you're familiar, county schools is across the highway. I believe they have 35 vehicles. They like using us because we're cheap, and it's easy to bring them across the road to us. They've been very, very cooperative in allowing us to fit them into our schedules. Servicing vehicles is a peaks and valley type thing. We try to put them in the valleys, even out or flatten out our overhead, keep that low hourly rate. County schools have been very cooperative. But as a result of these mileage increases and also additional vehicles added to the fleet, there's roughly about 25 vehicles added every year through a variety of different programs, grants, whatever. We have to stop. We have to draw the line someplace, and we're looking at cutting county schools loose, and it means they'd have to go out and find their own servicing at greatly increased cost. We need more staff to continue this efficiency. Admin has been pretty concerned about our customer survey results. We can track this by quarter because we put a little card in each vehicle after every service. It says, how are we doing? And this is what we're tracking. This is current, and we're starting to find we're slipping. People aren't quite as satisfied anymore. I think it has a lot to do that we're impacted, and there's a wait list that takes longer to get these vehicles out. This is a comparison of our shop rate. If we, like I said at the beginning of this thing, it's not a question of whether these vehicles are going to be serviced. They will be serviced because somebody's going to do it, whether we do it or somebody else does it. So these are the typical shop rates that you find on the outside, ranging from a low of $85 an hour to a high of $110 an hour. And Cacho might be familiar with this. A lot of these are flat rate. They'll charge you 2 hours on a job flat rate at $100 an hour, whether they do it in an hour or not. It's a flat rate. We charge actual. Down in the bottom is the fleet services. Our fully weighted hourly rate is $60 per hour. That's why County Schools likes to use us. If we can't handle the fleet, we have to start farming some of these vehicles out. North County is probably going to have to find somebody up in the North County Paso Robles Truck Center they've used in the past to do this servicing if we can't do it. So that what I'm trying to portray to you is that this is not an additional cost by adding this position. It's actually a savings. Not necessarily a savings to the garage. It's a savings to the clients who enjoy that $60 per hour rate. This is the North County shop area. You notice there's no shop. He's working outdoors because we're currently in negotiations with the Ag Commissioner to use his facility to move him indoors. He's by himself. Vehicles this large have heavy parts. I think it's an unsafe situation that he's totally by himself. It's hot up there. Occasionally he can find some shade, like working underneath this dump truck bed on a fully extended. But other than that, there isn't a whole lot to work on unless he's crawling under a car working on the ground. Now, we're going to get him indoors. That's a given. What I'm asking for here is some help for him so he doesn't have to work alone. So in conclusion, we need some staffing. We need some staffing support.
Supervisor Sajjan, questions for Mr. Leff?
Yes, thank you.
Supervisor Sajjan.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you said that.
No problem.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Leff, before you put your numbers up, I wrote down a question when you said that we're cheap. And I was going to say, well, how much do you charge? And $60.
Have you figured out if you were to go to $79, you were still a dollar below the next, or $6 below the next figure, I don't know if it was 8 or 85, up to $110 within the car dealerships. Has that been taken into consideration? And for the hours that you generate out of a year, how much that additional $19, which is still very reasonable today, and especially when you get it to be working on heavy equipment and all that, how much money would that generate and how much of it you can gear it towards the help that you're seeking to have? And we talked about, or you talked about the number of staffing in all the years. Do you have any numbers such as mechanic per mile or mechanic per car or cars per mechanic or technician? So if you can
answer. I don't know if you have those figures, but
sure.
Have you even considered to raise your hourly, not just to catch up with the market, because your people have to have the same expertise like those who are working at other garages. So why are we discounting their qualifications charging it $60 an hour?
First question, vehicle mechanical ratio, as I recall, is about 125-1. Nationally, it's about 100-1. Heavy equipment should be about 60-1. So those are the kind of ratios that we play to, and we're always above it. It played into one of the factors why we were chosen as one of the best fleets in North America. Second thing, we can't make a profit. Yes, we could make a lot of money if we charge $79.
Don't mean to interrupt you, but I wasn't looking at a profit, but I'm just even to break even with your additional personnel to add your technicians to break even by how much you have to add per hour, not to be profitable, but just to meet the needs.
Well, let me try to explain. This isn't a cost. If you add a position, whatever that position costs, you gain in revenue at the $60 an hour rate. Now, we can actually gain more revenue if we charge more per hour, but I think the auditors might stop in and hold us back. We can't really make a profit. So we're trying to cover our costs. What I know right now is that $60 an hour covers our costs. The market's there. We're trying to bring it in, not lose it. I don't want vehicles going out to Paso Robles Truck Center at $85 an hour. I want them to be serviced in the garage at $60 an hour, and we give all county clients, the county users, a break.
And that's my friendly argument, that even if you go up to $65, $69, $75, you're still below the next stop.
We'll make a profit.
You're still charging below the reasonable rate, and not to make profits, but to meet your expenses.
Well, we're meeting our expenses. That's it. The garage is an ISF. It all the money coming in is paid for by the users. So we don't operate at a loss.
So
it's all funded by the clients.
The cost for this additional technician you're requesting is not coming from general funds?
No, it comes from the clients. It's just a matter of adjusting the budget.
Thank you.
Supervisor Patterson?
Now, I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman. We should point out, when we say it comes from the clients,
general fund,
the clients are the our people, and the money comes from the taxpayer, and predominantly the general fund.
Well, that's why we like to keep that low hourly rate, rather than shipping it out to somebody else.
Supervisor Patterson?
But the county, excuse me, Mr. Patterson, if I may, the county board of education or their vehicles, I think county schools, we're all taxpayers for them as well, but they're not a member of this organization, so that's an outside customer that I was looking at if you were just to add. But I'll back up from my argument.
Well, again, it's this profit thing that you can't make profit. You have to cover your costs.
Maybe Mr. Shebeck has a better way of explaining it to me. I don't know.
Maybe. I've got a good scheme for you.
Mr. Shebeck, we don't want to hear that word anymore today here.
I think the confusion is if they hired a new mechanic and he had 1,000 billable hours, say, you can't bill out every hour. That's one of the problems with hourly rates. But if he worked 1,000 billable hours during a year at $60, that would produce $60,000 of revenue to the garage. That would be probably enough to pay a salary, just in round terms. So you wouldn't have to crank up the hourly rate. The question is, do they have enough work to keep him busy and actually billing out the $60, and instead of paying $85 or whatever else on the outside? So does that help? And maybe Mr. Lyb can.
That's good.
Mr. Shebeck, before you sit down, though, but, I mean, how do we determine that number? I mean, what if arbitrarily Mr. Leib says, I'm going to raise our rate to $70, what's the difference from what Supervisor Assajan said? Instead of being $80, we're still the cheapest. We're $10 under the cheapest by more.
Yeah, there are problems with making a profit, and that means in the long run they can make a profit on a particular job. But over time, the garage is supposed to be break even. The reason is because, as Mr. Edge pointed out, a lot of or almost everything they do is charged to other county departments. Some of those are federal programs that there's federal law that means they can't pay too much for that service. So it's a continual process of reevaluating their rates. And that's the per mile rate is actually
the more important rate, how much do they charge for the per hour on the equipment and per mile on the cars?
So on parts, you just give it that cost since you don't make profit? You cannot make a profit?
They have an overhead markup.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just an overhead for profit.
So when you figured out the $60, that came from a formula that exists?
That's what you call a fully burdened overhead rate, your cost per hour.
When was the last time that was revisited?
Oh, it's probably 2 years. It's time to revisit it again.
That's I guess, where I'm heading with some kind of a...
And typically, costs like that don't go down. They usually go up. But
that's an argument on your behalf.
That's because of, you know, salaries and whatnot, but don't know yet.
Okay. Supervisor Patterson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'll just comment that, you know, if we raise the rate, it just spreads it out to other county departments, and so the county still pays. It's just determined how much comes from another account to go into your account. The question I have, Mr. Leib, is do you send a North County or a mechanic to the North County every day?
No, he's permanently stationed there, so he reports to work now. It was we would lose about 2 hours a day with the traveling back and forth.
Okay,
with
right. And I'm sorry you did mention that. Yes. I was curious. He has no place to work at this point, but you're looking.
We're very close to a solution. Bob Lilly has been very cooperative, and we're going to use a prior storage facility for a shop, and then we're replacing his storage facility.
Now, is that the one in Paso or the one in Templeton?
Paso Robles.
In Paso, okay.
Yes.
Do you have an opportunity, or is there the workload in the North County to assign two mechanics there now, or will the second?
No, we are at that point now with this kind of a mileage increase where we feel very confident we have enough workload. Barring somebody stopping all the miles, I don't see that trend reversing. It hasn't in 27 years. It hasn't reversed.
Well, I know a number of departments actually have vehicles based in the North County.
Those are the vehicles we're servicing in the North County.
Okay.
It's easier for them to go there than come down to Kansas Avenue.
Okay, those were my questions. Thank you,
Ms. Wilcox. Your light was on. Did you have some comments?
So actually, Nikki wanted to spend a little time talking about the process and her recommendation. If you want to come up, Nick. In terms of workload going away, we have been told by the Public Works Department that they're planning on reducing their fleet by about 17% over the next 3 years. And as you see in the supplemental budget document, our recommendation is that we defer on this and regroup. I don't know if you want to sit over there, Nick, where the PowerPoint is. Well, I thought we had a PowerPoint that we were discussing. But bottom line is the process on this, and we've talked to the board. We appreciate Mr. Leib's acknowledging that the department did a very poor job in preparing this justification. There was much back-and-forth discussion and much 11th-hour discussion. I don't know if it's really not the process that matters. Well, the process matters to us because we have very, you know, small numbers of staff trying to work with all these county departments. And most of this information that was presented today was only brought up very recently, and it makes it very difficult for us to evaluate. But at this point, we are requesting or recommending that you defer and give us a chance to regroup, given that this is very last-minute information, and given Public Works informing us that they're planning to reduce their fleet by 17%. And Nikki, go ahead, and anything else you have to add?
Nikki Schmidt, County Administrative Office. Just to kind of reiterate what Gail has said, the bar that was submitted by Fleet or General Services, along with the bar for the CIP, contained no information. All the information that is being presented today is some of the information that I received through numerous emails and contact with Spence Graff, who's the fleet manager, and Jim Gator. I toured the fleet, went out there, and I went back and forth. The FaceTime with Dwayne, yes, maybe there wasn't any FaceTime with Dwayne, but I had plenty of FaceTime with his staff. Go ahead, Jerry.
I thought you were done. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say I received the survey results as of probably maybe 3 weeks ago. The results I got still showed satisfaction of 99% with Fleet's service. We contacted Public Works and Social Services. They were very happy with the service they were receiving in the North County, and they had no complaints, as Gail said. We've received information from Public Works that they are consolidating their South County and their slow county yards, and it's their intent to reduce their number of vehicles by 17% over the next few years. They also have been leasing some of their equipment. So that's what we based our decision on, is based upon the fact that they provided no results. Out of 95 bars, theirs was probably the worst. I will take part of the error. I didn't come right out and say that to General Services, and I should have. I was trying to be nice and draw out questions, and the information provided was not compelling enough for us to approve the bar.
And Ms. Smith, if I may, one of the requests I get is, especially for people that watch and listen, when you say bar, you're referring to a budget augmentation request, and so the listening audience sometimes has a hard time following what we're saying, so would you just take 30 or 45 seconds to explain what a budget augmentation request is for those that are listening and watching?
A budget augmentation request is basically a department's opportunity to sell to admin their request, their program, their service, their justification. I have a copy of it. It has a proposed augmentation, how they're going to pay for it, how it's going to affect other departments, if it's supposed to affect other departments are supposed to chime in on the bar. It has a nature of request, a background, a history, a justification, the alternatives considered, and basically results, performance measures, results, outcomes, which is what we take this information and put it into the bar form that they see in the computer. I mean, in your budget book.
And
what it's worth, just it started out being a budget augmentation request form, but departments told us right away that calling it a bar just wasn't going to work for them. So.
And since it has been a long morning and we're into our lunch hour, I just want to share with you, I did receive a call of a person that asked if we're passing the bar because you didn't pass that test, and she thought there was some law requirement of this. I said, no, it's something completely different. So it's often easy for us to get into acronyms and say things that, you know, a lot of people don't understand. So just using program language.
Personally, I get it confused with the budget adjustment request, so I can understand the public's. Any other questions?
Either way, we're raising the bar. Supervisor Gibson is first, then Supervisor Asajj, and then Supervisor Patterson.
Oh boy!
Well, given the hour, Mr. Chairman, I would yield to public comment if my colleagues are amenable.
I have a question.
Supervisor Asajj.
Very quickly, Mr. Chair, I'm in agreement with Supervisor Patterson that no matter what they charge, it's going to cost the other departments. But I'm looking the other way around. Do I penalize a department that has to keep up with the education of their technician to provide those services? Then my question for staff was, how does IT charge the other departments and or General Services with the cleanup crew? How do you charge other departments, and how often do you go up and charge more, and what is it based on? I don't need an answer, so we move forward, but those are all thinking way of dealing with what you have in front of us, and I think there got to be a solution.
Okay. Supervisor Patterson just canceled his request to speak.
It will come up later.
So we'll move into public comment. First request to speak is Kim Daniels, followed by Darren Whittington.
I guess I can now say good afternoon.
Absolutely.
Chairman Lenthal and Honorable Board. We here in SLO County have an award-winning Fleet Services Division that we're all very, very proud of, and this is to the credit of the employees who work there. These employees deserve working in conditions that reflect the levels of skill, expertise, professionalism, and customer service that they deliver. The office space at the general location on Kansas Avenue is incredibly small and terribly difficult for the service riders, mechanics, and God forbid more than two people should want to walk through at the same time. It needs to be improved, and the cost is negligible in the overall terms of the budget. Of greater concern to SLOCIA is the fact that we have one mechanic working in North County by himself, presently outside in all of the elements. So if it is 110, that's what he's working at. If it's raining, that's what he has to deal with. There is no shop. A shop has been proposed and can be provided, again, for a nominal overhead cost in terms of the overall budget, and is absolutely necessary. The conditions are deplorable and unsafe at best. Before someone is seriously injured, there needs to be a second mechanic up there, and there needs to be appropriate shop facilities for these folks to work out of. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Darren Winnington, followed by J.T. Hebard.
Good morning. My name is Darren Winnington. I'm the fleet supervisor for the County of San Luis Obispo.
Mr. Winnington,
I'm not a public speaker.
It's afternoon, but I just want to make sure you do that.
Oh, well, thank you. Good afternoon. I'm not a public speaker or a politician, so I may not speak well up here, but hopefully I'll at least get my point across. You don't see me down here very often, nor do I see any of you out at Fleet Services very often, so hopefully what I can share with you will open your eyes to the two main things that have been brought at issue here today, because I do work down there every day and I deal with the employees in the building. Our working conditions are pretty well for what we have, and I think that's why we're looking for just some small avenues of improvement, number one being our office that we work in, being as small as it is, does create safety issues, if nothing else, let alone running out of the space as the fleet continues to grow. We're constantly adding filing cabinets and everything else to keep the records of all the equipment and vehicles in the fleet. We also, unfortunately, we run with two service riders out at the fleet, and we are having to separate them in two separate buildings. The public works section that we combined with us now is to make it all one shop. We have service riders in two different places. I don't know if a lot of people do with car dealerships, but you would never be asked to go to one complete end to see a service rider or another one to see one to your particular make a car. They'll all be there for your convenience. We can't provide that the way it is now. With the extension of the building, we'd be able to pull both our service riders together, which would also be in the same office area that I am in, and I would be able to also aid in keeping everything running smoothly there. So I do believe the addition of the building, both safety-wise and operational-wise, would be a great asset to the county. I know I don't have much time left, but I'd like to real quick mention on our North County project that we've chose, instead of sending mechanics back and forth over the Cuesta to grade to deal with servicing vehicles up there, to place an employee up there. The employee that's up there has been doing a fantastic job, especially under the, what he has to work with there, which is minimal, but that is getting corrected as we speak, and that isn't even part of any of these issues. I think that's going to work out well. But as for him having a safer environment, there does need to be two mechanics up there. There is enough work up there for it to be done. There is social services, mental health, public works, parks department, probation. There's a lot of those vehicles that are up in the North County that no longer have to come back and forth to San Luis Obispo to be serviced or take away from their time, wasting their time traveling back and forth just to have a vehicle service. I do believe the addition, we would not want to change what we've done now and putting that mechanic up there, because I think it would be a disservice to the whole county. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your comments. J.T. Hebard, followed by Norman Hennessy.
Thank you for the board to have my time. My name's Jay Hebert. I work here, Fleet Services up in Paso, as an equipment mechanic. Just here today to ask that we do increase the capacity of people up there. It would make it safer. We don't have a lot of things going on all the time, it seems like, but there are a lot of stuff that where if we have another person, we can have a safer working condition, as to where if you're underneath something, somebody can keep an eye out. If you get called out in the road and you have to work on it or weld on the outside, you have a second set of eyes to look for fires. Things to that effect, as far as safety-wise, if something was to happen, you have somebody to call for. We share the yard with 17 other people that leave at 7 in the morning, and you don't see them again until 3 o'clock in the afternoon. If something was to happen, there is nobody there that you can have help you or rely on. In going with the building and stuff, as Dwayne said earlier, they're working on that now, so that is basically a null concern. But basically, we'd like to see more people to make it a safer condition in North County.
Thank you. Thank you for your comments. Norman Hennessy, followed by Under Sheriff Bolts.
Hi, I'm Norman Hennessy. I work for the Fleet Services as a service rider. And good afternoon to all of you. Many of these points I was going to talk to you about have been covered very well. But from my point of view and what I do there, I work behind that counter that you saw in those pictures. And it is a very difficult job to wait on my customers, make sure they're happy, make sure they leave with a smile, but also do my job trying to work around other people. There are days when I have a couple, three people in my office. I can't even get out the front door to go check mileage. Or if someone walks out there, they need a hand, I have to go out there and help them. It would be so much easier and be able to do it so much more professionally if we had the room and the space to do this like it needs to be done, and it would help out us a lot. Also, it would help my technicians that I work with. They don't have to come in and work with the customers. They have to work, be at the same place. They'd have their own space where I can talk to them and give them their work orders, what they need to have done, and everything would be so much easier. So if the board can really look at these things and really go over it, believe me, from my point of view, it would be great. So if you could do that, I would really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you. And Mr. Hennessy, before you stand down, and I hate to put you on the spot, but how much more efficient do you think you'd be if you had this space? I mean, I would give take 10 or 15 seconds with your time to think about this. If you could formulate a plan in your mind doing this, how much more efficient would you be? Or would you be efficient? I mean, you say you are, so I assume that's not
efficient. I think we are very efficient. Between the two of us do service writing, we are very efficient, and I think that's proven in what the awards we've won. And that's not just the service writers. That's the techs, our supervisor, and everyone else. But I think if I could keep from walking into the other part of the office to get files, keep walking over there to go to the fax machine, go upstairs to look up a file that we had to put up there because there's no more room in our office in there, it would save me a lot of time just walking around trying to find things. And when I have to talk to the other service writer, if I can't get him on the phone, he's out talking to someone, I have to walk down to get him where he'd be right there. We'd know what each other's doing. It would save a lot of time.
Would you say 10%, 20%, 50%?
I bet we could probably do, I would say probably 15, 20% better than we do now. And I think we do a great job now.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Under Sheriff Foltz.
Good afternoon, Honorable Board, members of the public and staff. Steve Boltz, representing the Sheriff's Department. On behalf of Fleet Services, we are a very high-volume customer of Fleet Services. We have almost 100 vehicles pushing about a million miles a year now. The two issues, as far as workspace goes, I can't say enough good things about the service that we get from Fleet Services. The number of transactions that they perform per technician is probably on the high end of the market, and we're always concerned about safety, particularly with our patrol fleet. The patrol fleet is about 35 now, and those vehicles, we have a high need to keep those vehicles on the road 24 hours a day. We get excellent turnaround time from Fleet Services. As I think has been mentioned here before, we pay less than market rates to get those services done. The North County operation in particular benefits the department and the county and the citizens in more indirect ways that are hard to measure. Typically, when we have to bring a car in for service, whether it's regular maintenance or repairs, it requires us to team up two deputy sheriffs from Templeton, drive the car all the way down. So it's a one-hour round trip that's basically although the vehicles still are in service and are available to respond to emergencies, it's an empty trip. So we're spending a lot of wages and indirect costs and taking units away from the North County where they need to be. So the North County operation has added tremendously to our turnaround time, and it's more efficient for our deputy sheriffs. When I say 1 hour, that's delivering the car, then we got another hour to pick it up. So I completely support the addition. We're not backing off of our fleet, at least not in the near future. We don't see that as a need. The other indirect cost that is hard to measure is the value of preventative maintenance. Our vehicles are driven sometimes 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, with just a shift change in between. The patrol vehicles are driven by different users. They're They're high-speed vehicles. They're heavy-duty use. And we get excellent service from fleet services. And I think the amount of money that's being spent here on them is well worth the cost.
Mr. Bolton, I might. How many patrol vehicles, just out of, for instance, do you have up in the North County, the Temple Station?
Anywhere between 8 and 10. Usually there are 8, isn't it, Spence? Typically 8.
Since Fleet Services started that program, do you still require units to be brought back to Kansas Avenue to the facility there to be serviced, or are they able to be serviced at that location?
Most regular maintenance services can be done up in the North County.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Supervisor Gibson.
And Under Sheriff, if I might, just a quick question. I saw in the staff report, I believe it was, that your maintenance schedule is 2 months or 5,000 miles on your patrol vehicles.
That's correct.
Are you getting that met at this point?
Yes. Yeah. Fleet Services is meeting our needs. Oftentimes with juggling other schedules, but they are meeting our needs. Yes.
Thanks.
And I think that's important to understand, because when I asked the question, I don't think the Sheriff's Department is the one that's getting bumped. They're the priority because of the 24/7 requiring the calls. But it's probation, it's admin, it's other cars that fall into the queue here to make that a priority to ensure that we have that efficient turnaround time for the deputies for those vehicles. Supervisor Asajjan, do you have a question for Under-Sheriff Bolts?
Thank you. Mine is a staff question, if you're done with the public hearing.
That was my last request to speak. Seeing no one else step forward, we'll close public comment, bring back to the board. Supervisor Asajjan.
Thank you, Mr. Hayes. This is a question related to insurance. In my self-serve operation, when there is only one person on duty, I pay higher workers' comp than a full-serve operation when there could be six employees at any given time during the hours. Has this been a problem for you folks, or your insurance company doesn't even know that you have one person operating all by himself in this case?
Well, the county is the insurance agency
on
this, and there's been nothing stopping. In fact, Dwayne has already moved a second person, that's my understanding, to North County. That was entirely within his authority to do early on. I don't know if Deb wants to comment more. And the only thing I would add is IT director, I mentioned in passing that given all the paperwork they have that's getting in their way, it would be a good idea probably to take a look at our integrated document management to see if we can eliminate some of that paper that they're dealing with.
Thank you.
Ms. Hosley, were you going to say, I didn't know if that was an invitation or a request from Ms. Wilcox to talk about. Good time to be gone. We'll just leave it at that then. Supervisor Patterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It was mentioned that Public Works is going to be reducing its fleet by about 17% over the next 3 years, and I understand that's a result primarily of a consolidation of their San Luis Obispo and South County yards, which likely won't impact the North County workload all that much. But I was curious to know if either Mr. Leib or Nikki Schmidt have information on how that transition is going to occur and if it would actually have a workload impact on the fleet services. Is it 5% a year for 3 years or all at once? And, will it impact the workload in the North County? The other comment I want to make at this point is my biggest concern is knowing that in the North County you have a mechanic working on heavy equipment that person's doing it alone because it's a high-risk job. And, even depending on how things sort out here, Mr. Leib, since you're up, in addition to the Public Works downsizing its fleet, could you address the workload in North County and whether it does require two people full-time to manage that, or will you be shuffling people or at least one person back and forth?
Okay, several questions there. The first question about the reduction in the Public Works fleet, 17%, that's probably about 50 vehicles over a three-year period. We add about 25 vehicles a year. We're going to add more than you're going to take out, so I don't see that we're going to run out of work, if that was your question. The other question?
Regarding North County.
North County is very high demand. I will tell you that this demand grew on us very quickly in the last year, It's only been in the last year that we've stationed a person up there full-time because we saw as the service truck was needed more and more often as people got the word that they could take their vehicles there as opposed to bringing them to Kansas Avenue. It just multiplied. So, yes, there is definitely work for two mechanics. We have one stationed there now. We're sending another one up there, not on an everyday basis, but I think about 3 days a week to help out with the workload. He's an automotive mechanic. We really need an equipment mechanic up there. And I wholeheartedly agree with you. One person working in a road yard on heavy equipment alone is not safe.
Thank you.
Supervisor Gibson?
Mr. Leib, on a sort of same question as Mr. Patterson, if you were in private sector business, you'd have a pro forma on this. How many hours and how many miles of vehicles are you projecting for the North County?
I don't have it separated out by the North County versus we just track the total fleet. That would take some time. We have that information. I could break it down for North County only.
Okay.
But what we're really addressing here, Supervisor, is the over 2 million mile increase in the last 2 years. And I can't stress enough that that doesn't mean those vehicles go without service. They're going to get service whether we do it or somebody else.
I understand the need to do that. And I was a little confused on a couple of points. You charge internally to the county by the mile. Is that true?
We charge by the mile, and we also charge depreciation on the acquisition.
Okay. Except when you're doing heavy equipment, then you're charging internally to the county by the hour.
Right.
When you go external, is there some reason you can't raise your rate to external customers? Because you can't make a profit. I see Mr. Seabach nodding his head, or is that the reason?
Yes, that's true, but you also can't charge more to certain programs or certain people than your own. That would be a problem. So if they wanted to go from $60 for a mechanic to $65, that would probably be okay, but it'd have to be everybody. You couldn't charge the county schools more than...
You charge county schools by the hour working on their vehicle, cars?
Right. Yeah, it has to be the same for all programs and departments. So
okay.
There are two constraints there.
Okay. But again, you've shown a dramatic increase in miles, and you're recommending an equipment mechanic for North County. Rough split of his time, it sounds like he's going to be working on a significant number of vehicles. Is that
he'll
true?
Be working? Well, it's split. Well, it's, for the sake of argument, let's say it's 50-50, heavy equipment and light vehicles. But the key to an equipment mechanic is you can work on everything. If you just have an automotive mechanic, you can only work on the light stuff.
Okay.
You can't do the heavy equipment. That restricts our flexibility.
And in terms of the number of miles that the county fleet accrues in a year, has there been any effort at a mileage reduction program?
No, we don't control the individual departments in terms of the use of their vehicles. That's up to them. We've looked at economies by trying to downsize the vehicles to get compacts. We've had some success there. More fuel-efficient vehicles, but in terms of telling the sheriff how many miles he can drive per year, we're not doing that.
I know better than to try to tell the sheriff how many miles they need to drive in a year, but I'm thinking in general, I'd offer that as a suggestion, given the price of fuel at this point, and we always separate our emergency from non-emergency right. vehicles. It would seem ripe for both savings in terms of the resources you need to provide and also the amount of fuel we need to buy to think about whether internally as a whole the county might be able to reduce its mileage.
Well, we had done some work with Jim Grant before he retired, and I would suggest that we do more work with admin. I think the control over that is really with the county administrative office. We can certainly supply the data and maybe some suggestions, but I'm not in a power position to tell anybody that they can't drive their vehicle, except my own.
Supervisor Robert?
Yeah, one point. I think I just go directly to the motion on this thing because we've tried a lot of things. If there's nobody else on these specific items, I want to make motions. And on the first item, go ahead and move the authorization to, I guess it's set up a capital improvement program, and the funding would come from the Department of Fuel Billings. And that would be the motion on that one.
Funding come from where? I'm sorry.
Charges. I tried to find a fund account, but I can only assume it's inter fund or inter.
Ms. Wilcox, for clarification.
What does it say?
And it comes from the Billings.
Ms. Wilcox, for clarification, the motion would. You state where the money would come from or what would be appropriate to put in the motion.
It's within the ISF. It's the capital project. Approve the capital project funded through the ISF.
ISF.
A motion by Supervisor Robitaille. Second?
Second.
Second by Supervisor Assagian. Any discussion? Roll call vote, please.
Mr. Ovitt?
Aye.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mr. Lenthal?
Aye. And with respect to the next item, Supervisor Ovitt, we're on.
I was going to make the motion to approve the position only because I like to see him in North County. And I would kind of like make stipulation that you try to hire somebody from the North County that lives up there, you know.
Fewer trips.
Well, I say that facetiously, but we've done that with the clerk's office and all the others that we've had up here. People don't realize that 40% of our employees live in the North County, and a lot of times not only do we save that cost, but having a person from
are we violating it?
I'm not sure that's a legal requirement.
No, it's not a legal requirement.
Good looking one too, or
yeah. But anyway, it's again same funding source.
Same funding. Motion by Supervisor Ovitt. Is there a second?
It's the position that was requested for, and the funding would come from the ISF fund.
So can I have a dollar amount? What's a dollar amount?
Yeah.
It's in supplement.
Right. I'll second that.
Motion by Supervisor
Ovitt. Question on the motion.
Oh. Yeah.
Second by Supervisor Patterson. Is there a discussion? Supervisor Gibson?
After due consideration, I won't support the motion at this point. And two main reasons. One, it sounds to me, we heard testimony that they have a mechanic up there 3 days a week. And, you know, I question whether we could go to 5 days a week within existing resources. Second question is lacking an effort at mileage reduction, or at least the study of mileage reduction as a means of efficiency in the county government. I think we could do a little more legwork on seeing that. I agree with the safety concerns of mechanic working on large equipment on his own, but it would seem to me that within existing resources, it would be possible to accomplish that.
Okay, we have a motion.
I had a question. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. Wait a minute. We have, well, now we got all the lights lit up. Ms. Wilcox?
Happy to accommodate the request. And again, kudos to the folks at the garage. I will say that it's going to be very, very difficult for my staff if we're going to be getting the kind of quality or lack of quality information that we get. We don't have enough time to run around getting this information. And at this point, we might just tell them, just drop it and recommend stuff despite what's contained in the recommendation. It's very hard for us to deal with that kind of information or lack of information.
Supervisor Asajjian?
Yes, and that was going to be my comment that I'll go ahead and support the motion. I thought in the very beginning we were going to maybe accept it in concept and have the working relationship to take place and come back with all the information that we're seeking here today. But thanks, Mr. Wilcox's willingness to make a point of that and well accepted, and I think it should be taken into consideration in the future with all of the departments as to make all that information available in a timely manner. But the other point I want to make that as this moves forward, as it's approved, I would like the department very seriously look into your hourly and apply it just like any other department would, and don't wait for 2 years. I think you should do it, revise it every year. Compare it to the market, compare it to your other departments is what they charge you if you were needed any computer work in your offices. So it's a two-way street.
Supervisor Patterson?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanted to concur with Ms. Wilcox and Supervisor Asajjian's comments that it's difficult for admin to make the right call when they don't have the information, and I know there's a little bit of a disagreement on how all of that worked through the process, but I do want to, you know, encourage everybody, actually, to make sure that they respond to admin's requests appropriately, and I think that the justification given to us today certainly warrants the addition of the position, and I concur with Mr. Gibson, though, that we need to take a look at perhaps reducing the miles traveled, but I think the economy will motivate department heads to give that a more critical look in the future, and we can encourage them to do that, but I'm sure that they will, and I just want to again suggest that all departments work closely with admin and getting the information that they need to bring to us to make the decisions. And had that been done, I doubt that we would be having this discussion this afternoon. We could have saved an hour and a half of a lot of people's time had admin gotten the information in a timely way.
Supervisor Willett?
Yeah, it's an interesting thing with this year's budget. There's been some new formatting. The departmental comments, I think, and I talked to Mr. Edge about this. I'm very complimentary about that. And again, these budget augmentation requests, which are listed in the document, my commentary on that was, even as though you have results, it would be nice to know if we had a little area in there why you did not recommend it. But this is the first year, I guess, that I'm going to say that I've seen these actual budget augmentation reports, and I didn't get all of them. I got one, I think, and I don't know why I got the one. But I think when I listened to Nikki speak, that what we, and I'm going to say it this way, we've got to set the bar for the bar. And possibly we were too low in expectation of what this budget augmentation needs to bring forward to present the case. And I think the issue about whether I beat on his head or somebody else's head is that I think if we're going through this type of a system that these reports have to bring that data before, because we want results. We want to know where it's going to go and what's going to be the outcome of them. And other than that, I just move for the motion or move for the question.
Madam Clerk, a roll call, please.
Mr. Ovid?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mr. Gibson?
No.
Mr. Shajian?
Aye.
Mr. Linthal?
Aye.
You need a motion for the overall.
That's what I was going to do next. Don't get excited.
Move approval tentatively.
No, there's no excitement.
Second
with the amendments.
I was going to say if there's no other questions, but I'll second Mr. Assange.
Of the support to county.
Yeah.
Hang on.
I have a question.
Hang on just 1 second. We have a motion by Supervisor Assange, second by Supervisor Ovid. Is there any comments under discussion? Supervisor Gibson.
I would request we continue this to after lunch. I do have a question within risk management.
And, Mr. Chair, I'll be happy to withdraw my motion.
Well, I just say we just hold the motion over. It's under discussion.
We can hold a motion open. That's not a problem.
Yeah.
That's agreeable, everybody? He just wants to eat before I'm talking. And before, I realize everybody's getting
maybe
hungry.
I need to eat before I listen to him. I don't know.
Unless,
and before we hang on. Before we go into closed session, I have to ask if there's anyone from public comment that wants to come forward and speak on any items in closed session.
Been up there probably.
Seeing none, we'll go to closed session. Mr. Lindholm, standard 20 minutes.
Mr. Chairman.
We'll be in closed session for the standard 20-minute.
Who did that? Okay. You're on now. You're on.
Thank you. Good afternoon and welcome to the afternoon session. Mr. Lindholm, would you give a roughly a time allocation and report out a closed session, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll demur to the first part, but the second part is that the board met in closed session on the items which were listed on the agenda. Board took no final action in closed session, which means that no public report is required.
Thank you.
Today's public report.
And would Supervisor Ovid, being our honorary legal counsel, like to respond to the timeline, to how long we were there, reference to 20 minutes?
Longer than 20 minutes.
That's correct.
Less than 2 hours.
20 minutes per person. I like that answer, yes.
What meant when we went to closed session that we'll be out 20 till 2.
He thought it was going to take us 20 minutes, but he meant 20 till 2. We'll be out of there.
Dr. Edge, did you want to jump in on this before we get started?
No, actually, I was going to say, Mr. Chairman, I think that you've got Supervisor Gibson on deck to continue with the support county departments. He had a question, and you guys all wanted to chow down.
Well, our patience was double parked, but Supervisor Gibson, it's all yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I did have a question. In the Risk Management Fund Center 105, there's indicated a recommended augmentation request for a wellness program for county employees on the to the amount of $150,000. And I see our former risk manager, now HR director, Ms. Hosley, if you could tell us a little bit about that, please.
Sure. What we're proposing is a one-year pilot
program. Ms. Hosley, would you state your name for those that are listening and watching, please?
Deb Hosley, Human Resources Director. What we're proposing is a one-year pilot program that would serve up to 750 county employees in a wellness program. The idea behind the program is to, basically what we would go out, it would be a voluntary program. We would go out and generate interest in all, with our staff throughout the county, getting employees interested in doing it, with the idea of they'd then we do health screenings for them and health assessments, and that would be used to create health plans for, plans to improve their health, and those would be like stress reduction, depending on whatever their health screenings raised, it'd be like stress reduction, nutrition, exercise programs, that kind of thing. We then check in and coach them throughout the year. At the end of the year, we do assessments again and see if the program worked. Did people lower their cholesterol? Did they lose weight? Did they exercise more? The whole idea would be is we'd do the pilot for up to 750 employees for a year and then look at the results and decide what worked, what didn't work, and then return to the board with a program, with a permanent program.
And the amount of $150,000 works out to $200 per employee. And again, is that a how would that be spent? I mean, you listed a number of things. Is that a contract with someone, or is that in house? How are we doing that?
Our benefits coordinator would coordinate the program. That's a person that's a risk management analyst in risk management. But we would be looking to contract with a firm to help us roll out the program. There's a lot. Originally, we thought that we wanted to create our own program, but we realized there's just a lot of programs already out there developed, so we can buy them and roll them out more quickly and more cheaply.
Because I was wondering, for instance, I was at the start, at the kickoff of the START program that French Hospital and CHC and the Heart Association were doing. Is that the sort of thing that you're talking about?
You know, I didn't attend that, but as I understand, it's kind of a wellness program to encourage people to live healthier lifestyles and make programs and activities available to them so it's easier to make those changes.
And we talked a little bit yesterday. There is a wellness benefit that some members of the county receive, and do we have a sense of how much that's used and any sense of results from that?
Yeah, we have a wellness benefit that is afforded to management and confidential employees. Roughly 450 people are eligible for that program, and roughly 200 every year take advantage of it. Basically, it's $200 that you can put towards some type of fitness activity that's approved by risk management. You can use it to help defray the cost of joining a gym. You can use it for stress reduction, weight management. It really... anecdotally, I know it's a really popular benefit, but we've never actually tracked the effectiveness of it, so we don't have any data relative to that.
Thanks. I don't know if my colleagues have any questions. I'll come back with a comment.
Ms. Osley, refresh my memory, but I believe you worked for the City of San Luis Obispo at the time they started this as a pilot program, and were there at the personnel department before they went to HR. And my recollection was not only was the pilot pilot program successful, but they modified it and adopted that tenfold. Can you just elaborate on a little of that history and other cities or organizations that you're familiar with, that some of the success stories they've had on this? Because I think there's a tremendous story, a good story to be told out there that a lot of people don't realize. So if you take a couple minutes and do that, I would appreciate it.
Yeah, I'm not sure familiar with the results that the city's program got. I do know that when I was working with public health to put the request together, they, Dr. Thomas had an intern working on a senior project where she called all over the state of California and got all kinds of data, which I don't have handy right now, but I could certainly get to you. But it was showing how, like, all of them had multiple returns on the dollar and were really well received by their employees. Their good employment and retention at, strategies to get to recruit and retain employees and increase productivity and that type of thing.
And I would just only add that it was a tremendous success story for reducing costs and reducing deduction of sick time, injuries, and things of that nature with the city, and I hope we have similar results here. Supervisor Patterson?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. When Supervisor Linthal and I worked with the Childhood Obesity Prevention Task Force, we did have people come in and speak to these kinds of programs, at least in one occasion. And I know in my previous life, I worked with a company that had a similar program. And as you pointed out in the report in the budget, Ms. Hosley, the benefits are rather well known. I mean, we know that employees increase productivity. There's less time lost to illness and a whole string of other benefits. And I'm wondering why we are embarking on a pilot program when we really know that they are beneficial. They've been done for years in industry. Why do we want to have a pilot program rather than just implementing a program and making it available to all employees instead of the first 750 that sign up? It seems to me that we know it's beneficial and that we should just, and if we're not going to develop our own necessarily, we find one that will work or that is working in a similar agency or with a similar entity and just do it.
Well, you know, $150,000 is a lot of dough. And to get the administrative office to support a recommendation like that, you need to be able to roll out, this is what I'm going to try, and these are what I'm going to measure to make it successful. So to me, it's just, I think it'll be a success, but I think it's important for us to show that it was a success and then also look at ways, you know, to roll out a pilot, see what works, see what doesn't work, and then let our employees help craft our permanent program, assuming that it's successful.
Okay. Well, you mentioned that you wanted to take a year to do this. Will we have results and time to evaluate whether or not we fold this into next year's budget?
Well, what would happen is if the board approved the funding in July, we would try to roll the program out by January 1, 2008. We'd run the program through 2008, then evaluate the results in January, February of 2009, hopefully be able to craft a program that can be included in the next year's budget. So we'd only have a couple months of downtime.
Dr. Wright?
A couple of months and a year.
No, I mean, unless I use the wrong dates, it would be a full year, then a couple of months of evaluation, and then that July, we would hopefully have funding for a new program.
In July of 2009.
Dr. Edge, I see your finger on the trigger over there.
No, Mr. Chairman, I was just thinking, actually, that based on our batting average this year, that would have been Deb's opportunity to say, you know, a permanent program would be a great idea. But she didn't take that opportunity, so maybe it's passed you by, Deb.
And I would add that I have no doubt, Ms. Hosley, it's going to be a successful program, and I thank you for the work you've done in this. And I really appreciate you looking into this. I know you're going to do a good job, and I'm confident that we'll get the benefit.
And I should mention public health did a lot of the research to get the information so we could move forward with the program.
And for those who couldn't hear that, kudos to public health because you were a little soft-spoken at the end. Supervisor Gibson?
Mr. Chairman, my thought was that as a pilot program, we could look at something less than $150,000 a year. I applaud this. I think this is great. I think this is headed in the right direction. But if we need to establish the benefits of this, I would submit that we could do that at rather less cost. We're looking at enrolling 30% of the county's workforce, 750 employees. Let me just throw out the thought that if we had 250 employees involved in a specific managed, seems like very intensive, wellness program, we could get the results. And I'd point out that based on the timeline that Ms. Hosley just outlined, we would actually be looking at funding this pilot program again for the 08-09 budget. So, you know, whether that carries through, whether this is the entire pilot or whether this is an annual cost. And so my thought whereas I endorse the concept completely in the spirit that Mr. Edge has reminded us of setting priorities in terms of things that we have appropriated yesterday for homeless services, for pest trapping, I wonder if we could possibly get by on half this amount and thus extend our resources, get the results we need, and talk about the pilot program when it rolls around in 09. I mean, talk about the permanent program when it rolls around in 09.
Well, with regard to that, I don't think it's going to be any easier financially looking at the forecast to say that we're going to have more money available in 09. So having that thought in mind, I think we need to make a compelling argument. 750 people is roughly a third, or a little over a third, of our total population of employees, and I think not to do that with a good sampling is going to weaken our chance to make that compelling argument in 09 to say that even in the tougher times, we know that we get great return on our investment for contributing this money to our wellness, to our reduction of injuries and lost work days. And so I guess I just fundamentally disagree, sir.
Yeah. I could follow that up, Aaron. Supervisor Patterson,
Did you want to follow?
Let me follow Jim.
Well, I was just curious, again, to fully understand the need to do a pilot. I mean, I think all results show that these are a good thing. And, you know, I think we should just implement a program, or if we have to do a pilot, you know, do we do a pilot with a third of the workforce or a fewer number of people to determine whether or not it's going to be successful. And there's a significant amount of screening involved and tracking and that sort of thing. And that's, you know, I guess good to know if we're going to do that on an ongoing basis. But to prove the benefit, I think that's been done. And it's a question of what fits into, you know, the county's employment profile and how many people are going to use it and that sort of thing. I mean, I think it's a given that we're going to get positive results, but who's going to implement the program? Who's going to do the screening and all of that?
That's where we would use a contractor to do it. And in deciding how big to make the program, we talked to a local wellness consultant that has done a lot of work for the county and been very well received. And he basically indicated that if you could get 30% of your workforce, that would be a really good starting point, because not everybody is going to want to immediately join. So if you get 30% and you know, and you see good results and people are enjoying it and they think it's worthwhile, then you can bring more employees along, and then it becomes less for, you know, cost per unit. But he seemed to think that 30% was a reasonable number to start with and probably fairly optimistic.
Okay. Thank you.
And I'll just follow this up, because I don't think we need to spend a lot of time on this. I mean, the long term is that in the bottom of the results on page B307 is the program will pay for itself through lower workers' comp costs and reduced sick time usage. Sounds good to me, but it's also asking for general support, fund support to the tune of $150,000. So, to me, again, we're looking at a pilot project to prove that bottom line results claim, and I think that's a good idea. Just to move this along, I'll move that we modify the budget augmentation request on the wellness program to the amount of.
Can you have a motion on the floor?
Oh, I'm sorry.
We also have some other people want to talk.
Okay.
So.
I didn't realize that. Then I will. I was in an effort of efficiency.
Slow down.
I will back off.
Thank you. Supervisor Asajjan.
Thank you, Ms. Hosley. The number of the employees you want to bring into the pilot project, is it first-come, first-served basis? And
yes.
Does that create any problems if you have more people that want to participate?
Well, again, the consultant we talked to seemed to think 30% was a good optimistic number to shoot for. In future years, we would hope to be able to accommodate everyone, assuming that we could show it was a success.
Are we prepared if we generate more interest among our employees?
I'm sorry?
Are we prepared to face the challenge if more of our employees are attracted to the program?
more people will want to come into the process, we have to say no at the end of 750.
Well, we are setting the budget at 750 folks because we think that that's reasonable. And again, I know $150,000 is a lot of money, but if you look at it in the context of our workers' comp program, where we've probably been as aggressive as we can relative to controlling costs, and we still spend $6 million a year on that. And there's not really a lot more out there for us. So relative to 100, I mean, if we reduce one back injury, if our keep someone from having a heart attack, keep someone from getting a chronic illness, it'll pay for itself every year. So, again, I know it's a lot of dough, but I really think we'd be better served to roll it out to a portion of our employees, make it successful, and then roll it out to everybody as opposed to trying to satisfy everybody and possibly disappointing a lot in the process.
Thank you.
Supervisor Gibson, do you have some additional comments under discussion?
No, not at this time.
Okay. Madam Clerk, a roll call, please.
And just for the record, the motion...
The motion is to approve the budgets. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Madam Clerk, would you read the motion?
Not that I would belabor this, but Mr. Gibson, if you wanted to make an attempt at this, and I would speak highly against it, you could try for an amendment to the motion.
My motion stays, Mr. Ovid, made a motion.
I made second. I'm not going to change.
Okay. That being the case, proceed with the roll call and the rest.
I will say one thing, Mr. Gibson. Management enjoys the privilege of this wellness program. Currently, it does not offer it to the employees. And this, I think, is one of the reasons that it's being offered to employees, because of the number of different aspects that this wellness program can be used for.
Right. And I'm just talking about scaling the pilots. I understand.
Yeah, and my... interest is in getting on with a program for everybody rather than doing a pilot, because I think it's been demonstrated time and time and time again that these work. So that was
Supervisor Sajjan.
Well, yeah, what I would like to recommend, Ms. Hosley, if as time goes on, I wouldn't mind if somewhere down the line when you have reached your maximum number of employees to come back and let us know if what is going on and what needs to be done.
Madam Clerk, if you're clear on the motion, roll call, please.
Mr. Sajjan?
Aye.
Mr. Ovid?
Aye.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mr. Lenthal?
Aye. Thank you. Now we move on to our afternoon topic.
Financing.
Financing is the word. Ms. Wilcox, did you want to start off, or did you want Mr. Seabach to come up and give us another words of wisdom here?
Oh, no, not shifty.
Not sure if we have any particular words of wisdom. Let's just run you through this, getting to the end of the process here. A countywide automation replacement, debt service, general government building replacement. A couple of these, both countywide automation replacement and general government building replacement, are simply funds that collect depreciation to replace buildings, obviously, and automation. Other financing uses, non-departmental revenue, that's the big one. That's where we have our discretionary revenue, property tax, sales tax, and transient occupancy tax, pension obligation bonds. The one that might get significantly bigger here in the not-too-distant future, and public facility fees. So if you have any questions, staff's available to answer any questions you might have.
Is there any question from board members? See no lights coming on. I did not receive any requests to speak from the public. Is there anyone from the public who would like to come forward? Seeing no one step forward, we'll close it to the public and bring it back to the board. Supervisor Gibson has his light on now.
I want to be sure that I'm in the right ballpark here. I was looking at other post-employment benefits. 413, the question I have there is, it's showing that we have a $25 million liability at this point, and we're starting to put money away against that liability, and my question is whether we know anything about that liability growing as we move forward, or
the auditor controller actually had an actuarial study done. I know that we're sensitive to that word these days, but to come up with that number, the retiree health benefits that we provide, depending on your perspective, are either stingy or frugal, but as a result of those, our liability is relatively modest, and so the payment plan essentially that Mr. Seabach came up with is intended to more than take care of that obligation.
Mr. Seabach, would you use words other than growing then and explain this to us, please?
Okay. Jerry Seabach, Auditor Controller. That was the $25 million was the current value of the liability for into the infinite future. This plan is intended to cover the current addition, current costs every year, plus set aside money so that the liability is liquidated over a 30-year period. So that it will grow because we will have more people retiring, the amount of money required, but the percentage against payroll, which is relatively small, as Gail suggested, compared to most of the other agencies, hopefully the percentage will stay the same, the payroll will grow, so the cost will be covered. Again, we won't have another actuarial study. We only have to do these every other year. Our plan was to do it in the into the second year.
Okay.
So it's supposed to take care of the whole thing, but we can't guarantee, as Gail suggested, actuarial science is inexact, if at best.
We've noticed that, and for some reason,
Supervisor Gibson, would you mind?
I'm sorry.
It helps if people push their buttons, because you want to start off and somebody else wants to start. So just push the buttons, and we'll have a fine order of movement. I know you got a lot to say. Fine, I'll let you go first.
Thank you. I just had a quick question. I can't put my hands on that fund center sheet right now. And as I remember, though, the amount was less than $2 million a year that we're putting away right now.
A little more than $2 million.
A little more, 2.3. Thank you. That's it.
Any other questions of Mr. Seabach? Ms. Wilcox, anything to add?
No, sir.
Andrew, you've been awful quiet today. Any numbers that we want to...
Mr. Chair, on
Supervisor Sajjan.
I'd like to lay a motion to approve.
Second.
Moved by Supervisor Sajjan, second by Supervisor Ovett. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Carries unanimously. Ms. Wilcox, next item, please.
Last item for the day is consideration of capital projects and maintenance project budgets. Our office works closely with county departments and general services in developing these. Vince can answer any specific questions that you may have on the capital projects or the maintenance projects for that matter.
Any questions of Ms. Wilcox from board members? See no lights on here? Nope. We do have a light. Nope.
Yeah. Oh, it didn't go on.
It did that time. Go. Supervisor Patterson.
Delayed reaction. Thank you, Chairman Linthal. Regarding capital and maintenance projects, I just want to tell staff that I appreciate the fact that we had an opportunity to spend one of our planning sessions dealing with the five-year capital improvement program, and so we all actually have a fairly current reading on what our future capital improvement needs are, and we're covered for this year, and it looks like hopefully we can know where we're going in the next four or five with our capital improvements, and so I'm certainly good with it, and again, I want to thank staff for that opportunity to focus on our capital improvement program.
I guess the one thing I should note is that, and the board's aware, but that we have moved $7 million from just general facilities planning reserves into detention reserves in anticipation of funding for the women's jail. The price tags, which we all recently learned, has gone from $30 million to closer to $40 million. And Vince and I are working closely with the Sheriff's Department and General Services. But so, you know, and hopefully we'll get some bond money. But if we don't, at least we've got $7 million stashed away against that future cost.
And Supervisor Patterson, I appreciate you thanking staff, but I think we have someone in the front row that did the lion's share of the heavy lifting in that presentation. Vince, why don't you stand up and take a bow, because you did a great job with that presentation for that half a day.
Put your jacket
and since you have your jacket off, it's my chance. No, stand up without your jacket. Please rise and recognize we're going to give you a round of applause. Supervisor Ovett?
Yeah, just a question. In other budgets, and I didn't get a chance to ask this question. I don't know if I oversaw it. The roads, usually the roads program was also in here. I know we had the IFS fund and we had the roads budget in here. I know we have a maintenance program, but it usually it listed out what their thing was going on. I didn't know if that's now separate.
You handled. Go ahead.
It wasn't.
Should have been covered in the land-based budgets yesterday.
No, I know we covered the budget issue, but in the past we've actually had
the
listing of the roads and stuff. I mean, it's not a major thing because I know they have the maintenance.
It's in the ISF.
It's in the roads budget.
All the capital projects are listed.
Let's see, if someone from the audience is going to talk and I get calls, believe it, people say, well, you can't hear, or what did you say? So whoever's going to be the staff representation.
Come on up, Leslie. Board,
please step up to the microphone, and if you need Vince to help you or hold your books, we'll get him up there to help you.
I just didn't find the page. I'm Leslie Brown from the Administrative Office, and all of the capital projects for Public Works are in Fund Center 405.
Page B30 is, and at SEC.
I'm going to stand corrected if I overlooked the page.
B30 through
B30. I stand corrected then. Okay. I did see it.
Sorry.
Thank you, Ms. Brown.
I just saw it on another page before. My fault.
Okay. There's no more comments from board members. We'll open to the public. I received no request to speak. Seeing no one step forward, I'll close to the public and bring it back to the board for a motion or an action.
Alternative approval.
Second.
Moved by Supervisor Asajjan, second by Supervisor Gibson. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Carries unanimously. Our motion is to continue tomorrow, 9 a.m. Yes. Move motion by Supervisor Elwood. Is there a second?
Second.
You want a second?
Second.
Second. Go ahead. Cutler's got it. Whoever.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
We'll see you tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock.